Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, January 6th, 2018. This is episode 1451. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them to your door ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time for a brand new year, brand new pile of tech that's just driving you nuts. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have something that's driving you crazy. 888-827-5536. Anything with a chip in it, I will talk about. That's computers, the internet. Home, that has a chip in it, right? Somewhere at one point or other. Home theater, digital photography. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson's coming up in about half an hour. Smartphones, smart watches. You know the drill, all that jazz. First show of 2018. 8888 Ask Leo. And of course, we begin 2018 with a massive security flaw. What else? Wouldn't be a Tech Guy show without a massive security flaw. They're calling it Spectre or Meltdown, depending on the technology. Spectre or Meltdown. And at first, when the story first broke earlier this week, we didn't know a whole lot about it. Now we do, because it's been embargoed. It's been known by the companies involved for some months, and this is how it's supposed to work in the tech world. Security researchers, the good guys, discover a flaw, and they notify the companies involved, give them, usually it's typically 90 days, 3 months to fix it, and then they reveal it to the world. And the reason that they kind of, A, they give the company some time because they don't want to reveal it and give bad guys, you know, a chance. But at the same time, they don't want to keep it a secret forever because bad guys may discover it eventually. And so it's kind of important to get the companies to fix it promptly. And that's the little sword of Damocles hanging over these companies' heads. In this case, the companies, well, initially we thought it was Intel. In fact, Intel stock took a dive this week because of that. And it turns out, no, it's not just Intel. It's Intel, it's AMD, it's even ARM. It's many of the chips you use. If you have an iPhone, it's the chip in the iPhone. It's the chip in your computer. No matter what operating system you use, it's almost certainly the chip in your computer. It's everywhere. Now, the technical details of this are complicated. They affect any processor that uses something called speculative branch prediction. Processors, in order to be speedy, starting in about the mid-90s, Intel started doing this, started guessing ahead at what the computer program was going to do. We think you're going to take a left turn here. So just in case, we're going to go down that road. And if you decide not to, well, we'll back up and go right instead. But we have a pretty, you know, and it works well enough that it does speed up the computer by a lot. 30% to 50%. It's a clever hack. Unfortunately, and it took them, to Intel's credit, it took people 32 years to figure out how to hack it, but they did. A number of researchers working on this for some time figured out that you could take advantage of this prediction to leak information from the cache. See, processors also to speed themselves up. Store a lot of what's going on in the in memory in the processor. And it turns out things like passwords and other stuff are stored there along with every other kind of data. Everything you type, everything the computer thinks, it's all in there. And if you can play a little game on the computer with this speculative prediction and trick it into exposing some of that information in the cache, you might be able to read it. Now, this is a very difficult thing to do, and these hackers are quite impressive. By the way, they're white hat hackers. They're good guys. But, you know, and I don't know. They have written examples of how this works. There's no guarantee they're going to get anything valuable, but they might. It also, you know, it's not something your average Joe's going to write a hack to do. Because then you get everything. You don't get just like passwords. You get everything, and you have to figure out what's what and so forth. But it's there. And it's a bad, bad bug. Such a bad bug that everybody's hair, they run around with their hair on fire. And you've probably even seen it on things like the Today Show and the Lightly News. I just wanted to let you know from a technical perspective what this means. First of all, the processor companies, of course, working on fixes, mitigations for this. But so are the operating systems. In fact, Microsoft has had a fix for this in its Windows Insider pre-release version. That will be pushed. Some of it's been pushed out already to you without even maybe your knowledge. Didn't look like an update, perhaps. It just happened. And then the rest of it, I think, is going to be pushed out on Tuesday on Patch Tuesday, you know, the second Tuesday of the month. Same thing with Apple. There have been some fixes, but apparently there are other problems, and so they're fixing those as well. But if you're using High Sierra, the latest version of the Apple operating system, and you've been applying your patches, you should be. You're up to 10.13.2. Again, a lot of these patches were just pushed out without your knowledge. They're just there. You should be safe. In other words, nothing to freak out about. Apple also says that they've patched the iPhone and the iPad. Your Raspberry Pi, according to the Raspberry Pi folks, is not vulnerable. It's too dumb. A simpler chip will be less vulnerable or not vulnerable at all because they don't do speculative branch prediction. Apparently, the Raspberry Pi, they've said, no, we're not vulnerable. But your Chrome OS devices, your Android devices, most devices, this is such a common technique used in processors these days. Most of these devices are vulnerable and will need patches. And this just underscores the advice I've been giving so often, and you've heard it so much, and I apologize for, you know, belaboring it, but do apply patches. When patches come out, they're very, very important. They're very important. And when you do those patches, you're fixing stuff that you may not even know you're fixing, but you're fixing important stuff. Scott Hanselman had a very good tweet, I thought. He's a programmer at Microsoft. He said, this is hard to explain to non-technical people. So he had a tweet. It was able to get into 280 characters. Let me see if I can find it. Where he explains this, he says, to his non-technical spouse. He says, imagine this dialogue. Honey, you know how we finish each other's sandwiches? No sentences. But you guessed sandwiches, and it was in your mind for an instant. If that had been a password, and somebody stole it while it was there, fleeting, that's what this is like. Oh, that is bad. I don't know. Does that help explain it? Maybe not. But it's that speculative branch prediction. Like, you're going to go this way. I'm going to store this stuff in from the cache that you might be going to. And a process can read it. And it turns out you didn't go that way. It doesn't matter. I already got your password. That kind of thing. Update. Now, you probably read in the Register and other places that these updates will slow the systems down. And that's kind of true because the updates prevent this kind of caching and branch prediction. They require a state change in the processor each time. And that potentially, remember I told you the speculative prediction would actually speed up processors by 30 to 50%? Well, you turn it off, you could slow down processors by a lot, maybe as much as 5 to 30%. However, A, we need to do it. And B, I think there are going to be mitigations that don't slow it down. I think there's going to, I think they're going to solve this. And I don't see, you know, on the machines that I've been using, including, by the way, that new super fancy iMac Pro, I don't see a big slowdown, and my benchmarks aren't showing a slowdown. So I think they're going to figure out ways to do this without slowing your system down. Nevertheless, you got to do it. Because now that it's out there, bad guys are going to try to take advantage of it. And they can do it with bad programs that you download by accident, that kind of thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Cisco Router was a friend of mine. Leo Laporte. I'm sorry. The tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I should really apologize to Heather Hammond. Is it possible? Could it be? We haven't seen you in ages. I guess Kim Schaffer decided to stay in Ireland. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Happy New Year. You think she met a fine young lad?
She might have done that. I like it, too. Yeah.
Lucky Kim.
Yeah, she's having fun. Heather's just here for the day because Kim is taking the day off. But Heather, and Heather, of course, you helped start this show with me way back when. But Heather's got, you know, a full-time job in the city, in the big city. So we can't count on the Phone Ranger being here every week. But it's nice to see you.
That's so kind, and you gave me so much credit. The original Phone Ranger.
The original Phone Ranger.
Take no imitations. Accept
no substitutes. So, but I see we have no calls.
What? Yeah, we do. What are
I
you
don't see
at?
Any calls.
Did okay. I do it wrong, huh?
No, you.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. That's
I'm
funny.
Up.
John, there's something going on wrong with my phone because I see the calls on the board, but I don't see them on the phone. So I don't know what'll happen. Maybe I'll try picking it up and see if something happens.
Try line one. Yeah.
Before I do, how's everything going?
I'm still single.
Wasn't what I was asking, but
I know. No.
I am glad to get the update. Guys, she's still single.
I just wanted to put that out there. No, yeah, everything's amazing. I'm happy. New Year, everything. Everything's going great.
Happy New Year.
But I do miss you guys, and it's so fun to be back for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, for a little time. Are you going to be back tomorrow, too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. And then is Kim really staying in Ireland, or is she coming back at some point?
I don't know exactly when the trip started, but this isn't... She didn't...
I lent her an
trip.
iPad for the trip.
Oh, so that's so kind. Go. No, let's see. She knew she was going to stay this long,
yeah.
Going back as
no,
far as
I think
August,
she mentioned,
I say.
Yeah, I think she mentioned that I'd get to see you. Yeah,
said, you think you can fill in.
I'm feigning surprise. I knew you were going to be here.
And you're looking great.
Thank you.
New Year, new Leo.
Yeah, new year, new Leo. I went to the Caribbean for the new year. Okay, we've rebooted my phone. By the way, that works. I had to reboot the phone. John came running in and rebooted the phone for us. So now I can talk to Lil. Thank you, Heather.
You bet.
Nice
Good to be
to
here.
See you. Welcome back. And hello to Lil, our expert, our echo expert in Long Island. Great to talk
hey,
to you.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Did you have a lovely holiday season? Did you go anywhere, do anything? I see you have a grandchild on the way. That's good news.
Not this year. This year we just decided to stay home and we're freezing to death.
Yeah, you're in the bomb cyclone.
Well, we got a foot of snow past 2 days, and it was mostly drifting. I mean, I think if you measured it straight down, it was about 6 inches, but it's piled up.
Right.
And it's now with the wind chill, it's about 11 below zero.
Oh, God. Oh, Lordy, Lordy. That's all right. You've been to Antarctica. You know what it's like. You can handle it. You've got snowsuits. You got all that. You also, I see, have an Echo Connect.
Right. That came out while you were gone.
Yeah. Now, I got my Echo Spot, which is the little dot, you know, alarm clock, so that you can have a camera right next to your bed, what everybody wants.
That scares me half to death.
I noticed when I came back from vacation, Lisa had put it face down. So I'm thinking it's going to be relocated. But the Kinect...
You need a piece of tape across the camera.
Yeah. Well, then it doesn't do the ambient light detection, and so the face doesn't dim in the dark, which is not a good thing. It's very bright. In fact, that's probably the real
reason. You know what you could try?
What?
A piece of something like muslin or cheesecloth, which would let the light through.
Right.
But would blur the lens enough.
Then they'd only get blurry images of me. It would be good. Yeah, I would. Yeah. The Zsa Zsa Gabor effect. So let me ask you about the Kinect, because they announced all of these at the same time. They just threw a whole bunch of new Amazon Echoes at us. And the Kinect puzzled me because it's just a box with a phone jack on it. What is the Kinect?
The Kinect is designed to hook your landline into the Echo ecosystem. So as you said, it's a box. It has a phone jack on the back, a plug, obviously. It hooks to your Wi-Fi system, and then it hooks to all your Echoes. So what you can then do is use your Echoes to use your landline to dial in and out, which maybe sounds good, maybe not. The advantages you get, you now get real 911. If you you call 911.
So the idea, I looked at this thing. I didn't really understand it. So the the idea is that now, can I pick up my phone and say, Echo, what time is it?
No. Don't do that.
So what it does is the other direction. I can talk to my Echoes and say, place a call. And instead of using the internet, it'll use my phone system?
That's correct. It'll do that. You also, somebody calls your landline, every Echo in your house will suddenly chime off with caller ID.
Oh, that's great. Who needs that? Ay, ay, ay. I already have too many things buzzing when I get a call.
The other thing I've used it for now is, besides I was testing it for, 911 and such.
Yeah.
What I did was I have friends at the local police station, so I said,
I was going to say, I hope you didn't. Oh, good. You said, can I try it?
I know.
Okay. Oh, good.
I'm going to call you, tell me if it looks like it's real. And they said, yeah, that's exactly what we get. But this way, if I take an Echo Dot outside on one of those little cordless speakers.
Yeah.
I now brought my phone with me.
Actually, that's cool. And so would you say Echo call, 9?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it would dial it, and the 911 operator would see your local phone number, which is really the key.
Correct.
The key to all this.
Because it's just going. All it's doing is
it's going through the phone system.
Routing the call from the Echo to your landline
that
service.
Makes sense. Yeah. Well, okay. Are you glad you got it?
I mean, it's inexpensive enough. I certainly don't mind having it. The only thing I had to do is I share the Amazon Prime account with my daughter and son-in-law in San Diego, and I had to put their dots, which are on the same account, on Do Not Disturb. Otherwise, they were hearing the phone calls I was getting at home.
See, that's probably why they did this. I think Amazon realized that a lot of people are just giving other people their Echo accounts by giving them an Echo, and then even though they're in different houses. Yeah, you wouldn't want their.
Right.
So you could just say Do Not Disturb on theirs, and it won't ring.
Well, the other thing I realized that meant you could do is if you wanted to use one phone number for everything, you take dots or whatever shows, spots, whatever you want, put them elsewhere. If they make a phone call, it'll actually call out on your landline number.
It's funny. It's one of those devices where I feel like the future is no landline at all. So this is kind of accommodating it's kind of a transitional object for Amazon.
Right. It's accommodating the need right now to have a 911 that really locates the house.
Right.
You can also now call all those numbers you couldn't call on the standard Echo because they were toll numbers and such.
Right.
You can now, because all it's doing is using your landline.
Echo has been selling like crazy. Of course, it was a big Echo Christmas. They sold, according to Amazon, and they don't say actual numbers, millions of Echoes during the holiday season. They have now, this one is $35. That's the Echo Kinect. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different kinds of Echoes. Seven different kinds of Echoes. They have the Echo Dot, you mentioned. That's the little hockey puck size thing. They have the new Echo with improved sound. They have the Echo Show, which I like. It's the one with the screen. They have the Echo Spot. That's the alarm clock. They have the Echo Plus with built-in hub. That's crazy. And then the Echo Kinect, and I mentioned the Echo Look as well. So that's seven different devices. Holy cow. It's Echo everywhere. Thank you, Lil. I appreciate the update. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So how's everything going? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's going fine. The one that we didn't talk about because running out of time was, did you notice the Echo gadgets? They've opened up the API to let people install the OS into headphones. And
there's
the only
millions of
right now is that game button.
Yeah, that was the next segment, I think, because I want to also talk about how the Google homes sold, like they say they sold 6 million. They have 6 million devices out there now. So they're coming on strong, too. It's a really interesting battle between the Echo and the Home.
I'd love to see a merger of the two of them because I prefer the search capabilities of the Google
Home. Exactly.
I think the Echo is better for everything else.
Exactly.
At least right now.
Well, it's the main reason I still use the Echo is for my Audible books, listening to Fire and Fury. Wow. It's like watching TMZ.
It's like reading the National Enquirer.
It's unbelievable. So that's a great listen. I was when I was cleaning my office for the last 2 days, I was listening to that the whole time. And then I have the I love shopping with the Echo because it's just, you know, you just whenever you think of it, you just say, "Oh, buy me that. Buy me that. Buy me that."
Oh, you forgot one more device, the little dash wand.
Oh, I have that too. Oh, so that's 8.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Crazy.
What I'm waiting to see is if cars and such start putting...
Oh, they will. I think they haven't they announced that? I thought they had. Maybe not.
A couple of them are starting to, yeah. But I'm waiting to... I don't know if Elon Musk is going to put it in the Tesla, but that would be sweet. Can you imagine just talking to your car?
It needs it, frankly, because it doesn't... the voice recognition isn't great, as you know, in the Tesla. It's also really slow to launch. You know, you press the button and you wait and you wait and you wait. And then it
launches. Right now I'm just thanking God that the Tesla put in the preconditioning before this storm hit because now I just start heating up the battery an hour before.
I love that preconditioning. I love it. And it does it kind of automatically. So it's really clever. You just get in the car and it's all ready to go. Now, we don't need it so much here, but it's still nice. On a hot day, it keeps you cool, which is great.
Yeah. You check the temperature. It also heats up the battery, too, so you don't end up with the car not starting.
Right. I think for you, this is very important. You don't keep
right now? Yeah.
You must garage it, though, right?
We don't have a garage.
Your Tesla's outside?
My Tesla's outside. I got one of those covers.
Oh, okay.
You know, the return. And for the snowstorm, I just put the cover. I'm telling you, I don't know what they put on the cover, silicone or something. The snow didn't stick.
It didn't stick.
I basically knocked it off and then rolled the cover off.
You see, Tesla's so smart. They are so smart. Non-stick. They have a Teflon car cover. That's amazing.
Something. I mean, it's something. And I was, you know, I have it in the car right now. I'm waiting for it to warm up enough to roll it up. It's soft. I mean, I was figuring in this weather that, you know, the plastic is going to get stiff.
Yeah.
It's not.
See, I really feel like Elon pays attention to details like that. He's like Steve Jobs that way.
He cares. Exactly.
He cares about that stuff. I don't know, in a fit of stupidity, I put a deposit down on a Model 3. But the problem is my lease runs out in a year and a half, and that's when the Model 3, it's going to 12 to 18 months to get a Model 3. I bet you 18. So it might work out perfectly. I might replace the X with a Model 3. We'll see.
Well, you also might get the jump to the top when they see it's your name.
No, they give me nothing. Nothing. That's fine. Nobody gives me anything. I don't want anything. I had to buy my iMac Pro and everything. I get front of no line. I thought Calacanis literally told Elon about me, and it still didn't help.
I sit there and I tell people you're the Consumer Reports of tech people because you just
buy it all. Yeah,
you buy it all.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to do that, and partly that's out of just I hate PR people. I don't want to. You know, you have to kind of curry favor to get stuff for free, and I'm not willing to do that. I don't like that. I used to have to do it because, you know, everybody, you know, when they start out does, but I'm lucky I don't have to do that anymore. Unlucky, I guess you might say, because I have to spend all that money on stuff. But
well, you know, something you can do like what I did when I was in Monaco. I told my husband everything he was buying on stamps I was buying on jewelry and clothing.
We got to talk about Monaco, too, sometime. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Lou. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Our first show of 2018. Wow. Wow. And actually, it's a good time to talk to Scott because January, believe it or not, is the big time to buy TVs. Hi, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year from the AVS Forum. It's usually, you would think that Christmas would be the holiday season. But why is January so big? Is it because of the Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, it's because of the Super Bowl. That's exactly right.
So people are going out. This is the excuse to get a new TV.
Oh, honey, we're having this big Super Bowl party. We need a new big screen TV. Okay.
Okay, dear. I guess you're right. So,
plus, not only that, it's now the time where the 2017s are probably going to start being decreased in price because, of course, I leave tomorrow for CES. where they're going to show the 2018
the
models.
The new TVs are going to come out. Now, they show them, but when do they start selling them?
Typically in the spring. So it's not going to be.
You could get it now.
No. Almost in no case at all. They'll be available typically March, April, up to June. Sometimes there's some delays. So, you know, they say March or April, but it's really June or July. You know, it depends. But we see them in January for later in the year when we'll actually get to review them. So as a result, now the companies are starting to say, well, we better start selling off our 2017 inventory.
Yeah.
And so you can start getting some good deals that way as well.
I guess my question is there anything in the television technology that's just going to make you say, oh, I have to wait for 2018? It feels like we're kind of at peak TV. Like it hasn't really much improved. Is that true?
No, that is true. There, for the most part this year, I'm expecting incremental improvement.
Okay. It's going to be LCDs, LED yep. backlit LCDs, and OLEDs.
Yep. Correct.
And that's pretty much it, right?
Well, you must stay tuned because there is an announcement at CES that I know about, but I'd have to kill you if I told you.
No, you're NDA.
I'm under strict embargo.
That's okay.
There is something new coming that is really exciting.
Oh, wow.
Really exciting.
Now you've piqued my interest. So the consumer, what was once called the Consumer Electronics Show, but now they say, just call it CES.
Yes, exactly. I don't know why.
CES is meaningless. But anyway, CES is the big, really big trade show every year. Mm-hmm. It's for some reason, they do it right after the holidays.
Year was really great because it's a full week after New Year's. Usually it's like a couple of days.
At least you get a break.
So, I get a little bit of a break a chance to pre-write. I've been spending the last 3 weeks pre-writing all the stories that are going to get posted the moment the embargo lifts.
Oh, that's so right? They do let you know ahead of time what you're going to see.
In many cases, they do. Yes.
Nice.
But they make me sign my.
No, you can't say anything. Away. I understand that.
And that's fine. I don't mind. But it's great because I get to pre-write and pay a little attention to the story rather than just bang it out and post it real quick. And it gets to go up the moment the embargo lifts, which in this internet age, as you know, minutes count.
When do you go out?
I leave tomorrow.
Really? Because it's technically next week, right?
Or this? Yeah, that's correct.
Like Tuesday.
Well, Monday is called press day, and it's wall to wall press conferences. But Sunday night, Samsung is holding what they call their first look event. So it's really the first event that I need to be at. And so Sunday, tomorrow at 6 p.m. Pacific time, I will be posting or releasing that my story's going live about the Samsung event. And from then on, it's going to be just a flurry of posts about all kinds of stuff that are being introduced mostly on Monday. And so, you know, the embargo time is the moment the press conference starts, the embargo lifts. I'm going to have everything preloaded into the forum and scheduled to post right at that moment. It's really quite exciting. And I will tell you that there is something new in television, in consumer television, that I'm really excited about.
And you'll read it first at avsforum.com.
That's right.
Interesting. So I guess the answer to my question is no, we haven't hit the end of the line. It just felt like it for the last few years, but there is something new. It's not 8K, is it? Because I'm not really.
There is, yes, that's not what I'm talking about, but there are some 8K TVs. Oh. I can tell you for sure, LG lifted their embargo early. So all of my LG stories are already up on AVS Forum. And that includes, it's more of a prototype or what they call a technology demonstration, an 88-inch 8K OLED TV.
88-inch
It's a gigantic
8K.
Thing. Yeah.
Wow. And it'll cost $150,000.
Oh, I don't even know that it's ever going to be a commercial product.
Yeah, they don't even have a price.
It comes not from LG Electronics, which sells TVs to consumers, but it comes from another division of the company called LG Display, which actually makes the panels, the raw panels that go into the LG Electronics TVs. They also sell their panels to other companies as well. And so this 88-inch 8K TV, OLED TV, is being demonstrated by LG Display. It's more of a technology demonstration. We're going to see other 8K TVs. We have for years. I remember one year at CES, you and I were there together, and we went and saw an 8K display in the Sharp booth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's amazing. You know, you can at that display, they put a little magnifying glass next to the TV, and you could, like, go up with a magnifying glass and still not see the pixels. They're so tiny. But I'm with you. I don't really think that's very important.
I have to say, you know, we were watching last night in my office. I have kind of a home theater. It's dark. I have a, as you know, I have the very nice LG, two-year-old now, LG mm-hmm. OLED display in a surround yep. sound system. And it was, we had been to the movies earlier in the day. It is better than a movie experience. It mm-hmm. really is mm-hmm. stunning and crisp, mm-hmm. especially if you could sit close enough that you really get that full screen
Full immersion.
Yeah. And I
and
just
even
feel...
if you sit even if you sit close enough, you still don't see the pixels.
No.
Therefore, you're not going to see them in 8K.
Yeah. What's it going to do?
So
yeah.
What's the point?
It is razor sharp. The text is so sharp. The colors, yep. HDR looks so good. I feel like we are we have such great TVs. So I'm very interested in what could possibly
be better than that.
And so we'll find out. CES is coming up this week. Scott Wilkinson is going. He will file. And, of course, next week we'll talk a lot about it. And
well, I'll be able to talk all about it next week on the show. You bet.
Let's put it this way. Should I start saving now?
Well, this new thing that I'm thinking of will undoubtedly be expensive. Almost nobody mentions prices at this point.
Not anymore. And also, we have to say this disclaimer every year. Stuff shown at CES frequently doesn't come out till the end of the year, if at all.
Yeah, sometimes that's true.
So,
you know, so it's hard. I think this thing will come out, but I'm sure it'll be expensive because it's a fairly new technology. We're going to see evolution in what are called quantum dots as well. Yeah. This is not that what I'm thinking of, but we are going. But quantum dots are going to take televisions another step forward in a year or two as well. And I'm going to be looking at that pretty closely as well.
Very exciting. Next week you'll hear the details. Of course, if you're in a hurry, you can go to avsforum.com. That's where Scott is editor and read his stuff. And Mike Heiss is in our chat room. He says, we know so much stuff. It's going to be really cool. I guess Mike works with you over there, and I guess he's got...
He does. Mike's a great guy, and I'm sure I'm going to see him there at CES. That's and
exciting.
Looking forward to it.
That's exciting. Well, have a great time. Set your pedometer.
I will.
Calibrate
it. I have it all ready to go.
Get ready. We'll find out how many miles Scott walked next week. Scott Wilkinson, thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this.
So anyway, hey, everybody. Happy New Year to you. Glad to see you. Hope you all had a great time. Those of you in the eastern half of the U.S., stay warm, stay safe. It's a bomb cyclone out there, man. I have to say, I don't mean to gloat, but I'm really happy I live in Southern California because I'm not going to deal with all that stuff. But I do sympathize and feel for you guys that are having to deal with that, and I mostly hope you stay safe. Loquacious, I'm not going to be doing CES coverage from Home Theater Geeks. However, I am going to be doing some video interviews for AVS Forum, so you'll be able to see those on AVS Forum, and I do hope you'll check that out. Mike Heiss, I'm not going to comment on that because I can't yet. Cooper saw some LG OLEDs for half price this week. Yeah, see, that's I think, and you know, the 2017s are plenty fine. They're very good. There's nothing wrong with them. Like I said, in terms of OLED, we're going to see incremental improvements, better processors, primarily. And you know, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. But we are going to Tech Dino. Yes, we are going to see something pretty exciting. I think I'm very excited about it anyway. Dr. Mom asks, what's on the horizon for bezel-less TVs? I've got some cabinets, can't go to a larger TV unless I can get one without a bezel. Well, many TVs these days are almost bezel-less. The bezels are extremely thin, and we're going to see a ton of that at the show this year. The TVs are going to be not quite bezel-less, but almost. Certainly compared to 3 or 4 years ago, they're very, very small. Yeah, loquacious. I wish I could whisper some of those secrets to you. Hey, Sybil, LLAP. Good to see you. Thanks, Tech Dino. User 2032. No, I'm near Sherman Oaks, but I'm not quite in Sherman Oaks. Ken Crayley, how are you? Good to see you. Lawn Dog, I'm not under MDA. No, me neither. I can make a prediction, something to do with laser projection. That is not what I'm talking about. Although there are going to be some laser projection, laser projectors there. LG just announced, and I can say this, a floor-standing laser-based 4K projector. So that's kind of cool. And yes, Graveyard Tuba, I am taking much more vitamin C so I don't get the CES crud. I hope I don't, that's for sure.
Take D as well.
D, okay.
D is actually more important than C. D really makes a big difference, yeah. Take a lot of D now and keep taking it. Really beef up the D. The D is really big on immune.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you. Good advice.
All right, thanks, Scott. You going to stick around for the top or you got to go?
No, I do have to go this time.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
See everybody.
Have fun.
On the flip side.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo. Wow, that's a tease, isn't it? I know something's coming to the Consumer Electronics Show. It's going to be big, and I can't tell you. I'm glad I asked. I wonder what it is. We're going to see lots of news. Consumer Electronics Show is not, I don't think, is as important as it used to be. This is a long tradition in technology. In fact, before CES, it was Comdex. A friend of mine was talking to a young person. He thought he was making it up when he said there was something called Comdex. He thought it was, no, you're kidding, right? No, that's the name of it. Stood for the Computer Dealers Expo. And before CES has been around since the 30s, but that was the big computer show. Once Comdex folded, kind of a little footnote to this, the guy who started Comdex, Shelley Adelson, sold it right before the bust. And, you know, the technology bust in 2000, reaped quite a bit of money, put it into casinos in Macau, and is now a multi-billionaire and a big funder of the Republican Party. But that's just a footnote. But he's quite a power broker. In any event, CES has been for the last, I'll tell you what, when I started doing this show back in 2004, the third and fourth episode I did were from CES in Las Vegas in 2004. And then it was a big show. 150,000 to 180,000 people show up. Maybe it'll be even more this year. It is, there's miles of aisles, booths galore. All the big TV companies go. Not so much the big computer companies. Microsoft used to make a big deal at CES. They don't go. Well, they don't have a big booth. They're there, but they don't have a big booth. Apple hasn't been in years. But you'll see Lenovo there. You'll see the PC manufacturers show no new computers there. Samsung is there, but more for TVs than phones. There's another event coming up in Barcelona in a month and a half, 2 months, called Mobile World Congress, and that's where the new phones will mostly show up. Expect a lot of news from CES over the next week. And certainly next week, we'll spend a lot of time talking about it. Let's go back to the phones. Ron in Orange County, California. Hello, Ron.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Very, very good. Hope it'd be better after I talk with you today.
Uh-oh.
I have a little minor situation. I'm a small business owner. And I have regular clientele, and I'm looking for like a software that basically I can input all their information, like the first name or last name, email address, and then once a week just do a mass email out to all of them with just one type of advertising that I do.
Yeah.
And then the week afterwards, change the advertising, and they all get it all again.
Yeah. This is there's two parts to this. The first, it's really called customer relations management, or CRM, and it is a big business. You'll see companies like Salesforce
which is probably the biggest in the industry, with software solutions for this. But if you're a small business, you probably don't need anything as powerful as the Salesforce tools. The other thing to be careful about is how many people will be on this mailing list, do you anticipate?
Well, right now, I've got like 30 customers.
Nothing. Okay. As you get bigger, you're going to... Yeah, you'd like to get to hundreds, maybe thousands, and that's when it starts to become an issue. Your current internet service provider will balk when you send more than 50 emails in a day or more, because then they are afraid you're becoming a spammer. So generally, when we do a mailing list like this, we won't do it directly from our internet service provider. We'll use a service. You've heard of MailChimp or Constant Contact. These are very well-known companies that do exactly what you're talking about. In fact, I would probably go to MailChimp. As silly a name as that is, it's good for small businesses. They have a free tier. They call it marketing automation. I think that will make sense to you, given what you just described. That's exactly what you're talking about, right? Kind of automatically find and connect with your audience by emails. And it turns out, email, I for a long time thought, oh, email is useless because we get so much spam. People just don't pay attention. But time and time again, everybody I know who's in this field, in marketing especially, says, no, it's the best way to stay in touch with clients, to fill them in. You have to have an email newsletter. You have to have it. So I would absolutely look at MailChimp. They have pricing for startups. They have a free tier. And it does exactly what you're just describing.
Wonderful.
As you get more sophisticated, you might want to run something more powerful like Salesforce that lets you kind of – then you get things like ticklers. Like you look at a client and you see all the contacts you've had with him, all the agreements, all the back and forth. You can get a tickler, say, yeah, it's been 90 days since you talked to Joe. You might want to call him or send him an email, all that kind of stuff. But for what you just described, MailChimp is perfect. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. And I should, I suppose, give a plug to the other guy. And there are many in this field. The big two are MailChimp. I think I keep saying Constant Contact. Is that it? Yeah. Constant Contact. You might want to look at them, too. I don't use either one, but I think from the people who do that, I get the strong sense that MailChimp is kind of the good one for small businesses, like when you're first starting out. On we go to Mark in Loras, South Carolina. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you? My pleasure.
Hey, yeah. Hey, listen, I've been noticing with the Android phone, I guess with the last update, and first of all, my phone is just a minimal, it's an LG. I think it's a Tribute, and it's running Marshmallow. And the thing I'm noticing, I guess, in the last week since I did an update was... every time I use the voice, send a voice command, whether it's OK Google or even if I'm doing text messages, every once in a while it'll pop up a little bubble at the bottom in kind of black background, white text. It'll say sending audio to Gmail account, and it'll say my Gmail account name at gmail.com, basically.
Yeah.
And I haven't noticed this before, but it's, I guess what I'm noticing now, it's just like, I don't know what's going, and it sends a saving it to it, but.
No, this is normal. I'll explain. I have to take a break for the top of the hour, but I'll explain off the air, but this is exactly normal. It's just letting you know which account it's using as it's doing it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the way Google works is whenever you use Google, everything you do is associated with. And I wish they wouldn't call it a Gmail account, but it is. It's your Gmail account.
Okay.
So it's not, it implies that it's emailing it somehow, or it somehow has something to do with email. It doesn't. It's just that's the name of your account.
Right.
So what it's saying is I'm using this account. And I've never seen this behavior, but then again, I haven't used Marshmallow in years. So I don't know what they've done with updates on Marshmallow and why they're popping this bubble up each time. That's a new behavior?
Yeah. I mean, the last update I did with Google, not with the phone itself, but with, I typically don't put the updates on right away. And I said, let me update this and update the maps. And I went to go update it. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to notice these like little bubbles coming up. And Now, when I Google, when I do a Google search of this term, and it says sending, it doesn't say saving. It just says.
Yeah, it has to. If any dictation you do, it's going to send to the Google servers. It has to, because the phone doesn't have enough power to do it. The recognition itself. So it's always that's always been the case, though. So that's not new.
Maybe they had to be more transparent.
I think maybe they're just letting you know. Yeah, but and they're letting you know which account it's using. Do you have multiple Gmail accounts on that phone that you're using?
I do, but it's associated with one.
Yeah, no, that's why, because it could be another one. So it's telling you which account. And here's where this is valuable. You can go to google.com/dashboard and log into that account, and it will have a record of all – it even has the audio of all of the things you've asked it. So it is saving it.
All right.
Okay. But it saves it, and it has, and you can delete it there if you wish, or clear it out. You can even tell it. I think you can say not to save it in future, but it doesn't save it for any. It's not a privacy issue. It's associated with your account. And I think that's why I've not seen the bubble. I think you have to, because you have multiple accounts. It's just saying, well, just so you know, this is where that's going. It's this account, not that account.
Yeah, and the way it's actually written on there, like on the text, it says, you know, it'll be my user account name at gmail.com.
Right.
It'll say sending to that, and that's just like, it just makes me feel a little uneasy.
I don't blame you. It implies it's emailing it or something. Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
Oh, exactly.
What it's trying to do, and it's typical Google, they're engineers. They don't communicate. It's like normal people. What it's saying is, this is the account we're using for this. And they've always sent it up to the Google servers just because they have to. That's the same thing with Siri. All of these voice recognition, it's very rare that there's enough juice in an Amazon Echo or a smartphone to do the voice recognition. That has to be done on the server side.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that got me about it was that, I can go into the phone and look under the the account settings for the Google Assistant. And I could see all those, and I could delete those.
Yep.
But I can't turn that option off, and I guess that there's no way of doing
it. Yeah, I've
it.
Never seen that. That's weird. So is it bugging you? Are you
it doesn't. It's not that it's bugging me so much as I would like to turn it off.
Yeah. Is it when the keyboard is visible?
No. Only when I whether it's visible or not. It's anytime I press the mic button, that the one that looks like a mic, or if I even say "Okay, Google."
Oh, okay.
It'll actually come up.
So if it's the keyboard behavior, because I think Google's own keyboard might do this. You could change keyboards. You could use somebody else's keyboards. But if it's happening even when you just say "Okay, Google," then there's probably, I don't know how to turn that off. I've never seen that before, so I can't.
I'll give you an example of like some of the things where I felt uneasy. Like in the news the other day, they were talking about a bomb cyclone, and it's just a storm.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I wanted to say to someone in a text, oh, yeah, because I'm originally from Philadelphia. I live in South Carolina, and I was texting somebody, and I said, oh, yeah, I was going to say, did you hear about the bomb cyclone? But then it says, oh, saving it to your – it's like, is this going to be – I guess misinterpreted as like.
You don't want the word bomb to show up in your email. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
You're safe.
This is just how I get about this stuff because I know I'm. There's nothing, I know I'm saying wrong, but at the same time.
No, I don't blame you. Everybody's a little jumpy now, right? So completely reasonable. I don't know exactly what to say about that, except that. Your carrier sees all your text messages as well.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is monitored no matter how you create it, whether you create it by a keyboard or a voice. It's monitored and recorded by Google and your carrier. So I don't.
Yeah. And on top of that, Google sometimes, like, maybe it's because of my cheap phone and I'm talking about like. Literally a $100 phone. So, I mean, and it's perfect for me. It doesn't.
Yeah, that's fine.
I love tech.
No judgment.
but it's just, it does enough. It does
yeah,
a job for
sure.
Me. But the thing
sure.
is, like, Google Assistant, like oftentimes, makes me wonder if Google has a sense of humor because it'll just, like,
I know.
crumble at my words, and it's like, and I have to really read over a text before I send it to somebody because it's like, I didn't say that.
I know. I know. There's a whole damn you autocorrect.
It'll be just way off of what I just said, and it's just like,
I know.
But then it'll make sense to someone else, but it's like, oh, I didn't mean that. Something like a little derogatory or something.
Google the words "damn you" autocorrect. There's a whole website that, frankly, when I read it, I can't stop laughing. Tears come pour from my eyes because it's so funny what these autocorrects do. That's just, you know, hey, it's amazing that it can understand us at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then I guess, you know, when you look at the bright side, I mean, it's amazing we could actually have something we could talk to now.
I know.
I was just talking earlier about the dot. It's like
it's amazing.
Myself and I gave one as a gift. But at the same time, I don't know how someone else is going to take that because you're basically taking a little bit of privacy away from
it. Yeah. I mean, we all have to kind of deal with this personally. Like, well, I love the convenience. Is it worth the potential trade-off? And there's no question you're giving up privacy. I mean, there's not a question at all. It's not always listening, but it is whenever you say the trigger word, sending anything you say after that up to the servers, whether it's Amazon or Google or Apple. And so, you know, somebody's got a copy of that. But don't forget, everything you text also is stored, as we know from watching, you know, TV courtroom dramas, is stored by your cell phone company as well. So, and by the way, the cell phone company has even less reluctance to hand your conversations over to the authorities. They do it automatically. Google and others at Apple fight, you know, they tried, you know, they only do it with a subpoena or a warrant, and they're but the phone companies have pretty much a wide open door to the spy agencies. So if that's what you're worried about, you better get rid of that cell phone and go back to pen and paper.
Oh, yeah, and I don't want to do that. I mean,
I know, but, you know, it's terrible. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I know, you know, we just got to watch carefully and be aware and be alert and make that decision. Each person has to make that decision for themselves.
Oh, Leo, also, I want to make a let you know of an issue I ran into, and it's fixed now, but regarding the meltdown. The Spectre thing. Two nights ago, I went to go check to see if there was an update because I had heard that there was actually an out of cycle.
Yep. They pushed it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's knowledge base 405-6894.
Yeah.
I installed this maybe at like 10 o'clock at night. Probably wasn't the best time to do it. I got a blue screen of death like I never seen before.
Oh, nice.
And it wasn't your typical blue screen of death. And now the thing is, I'm also running an AMD. I think
I'm like almost at, I got to run. We'll talk more about this for sure. There's much more to say about this. I think you're okay. Hey, our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Oh, I love Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You know Quicken Loans. Best lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. 8 years running now. Number one, the best. They're one of the biggest lenders, but they're also the most technically savvy. And I really, you know, as a tech guy, I appreciate that. For instance, this Rocket Mortgage they created is an entirely online mortgage approval process. You do not have to go to the lender. You do not even have to get paperwork together. You don't have to get pay stubs or banks or anything. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They're going to ask you questions that you already know, social, address, things like date of birth that you already know. Then they're going to say, okay, we think this is you. They have trusted relationships with all the financial industry. So they say, we think this is you. Can we pull your credit report and look at – they get the information they need. And then based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they'll crunch the numbers. And then they say, okay, you qualify for these loans. You choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. It's completely transparent. Couldn't be simpler. And then – when you find the loan that's right for you, you mortgage with confidence. It's Rocket Mortgage. It's brilliant. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It's fast, too, by the way, because all this is computerized. It takes minutes. So you could literally not be even thinking about buying a house. Go see a house. You know, the neighbors are having an open house. Let's go see. Let's just see how the other half lives. Well, hey, this is nice. We could afford this. Let's buy it. You can right then and there. Take your phone, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, answer the questions. Minutes, within minutes, get a big green button. You're approved. Show the realtor. We're approved. We want this house. That is the way technology should work. RocketMortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/techguy. We thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support of the Tech Guy Show, making it possible. The sponsors that I mentioned that make it possible for us to give you all this absolutely free of charge. They even pay for Heather Hammond's beautiful fur coat. That is, I love that. That is such a good coat. Are you freezing in there? What are the earrings, though? Are outrageous. Are they Christmas trees?
It's,
they're beautiful.
I totally forgot.
Pine cones? Christmas trees?
Tassels.
Tassels.
That you wear on your ears.
You are such a clothing maven. You're amazing. It's nice to see you again. Everything going well?
Yeah, it's great.
Good.
Good to be good. Here.
And you're doing, whose show are you doing?
Chip Franklin.
Chip Franklin show on KGO, on the big KGO in San Francisco.
Drive Time.
Is that fun?
Yeah, it's a blast. We have a blast.
I always see all your pictures of all these famous people that come by. That's nice.
Right?
That's nice.
See, Lawrence O'Donnell was a big one.
I really like him.
Yeah, he was so sweet.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, it was kind of special for me because my grandma loved
him. Oh, did you get an autograph for grandma?
I didn't. I should have. I was just happy to tell him.
Yeah.
Nana loved him so much, and so it was such an honor to meet him because she's passed since then.
Oh.
So it was just really cool.
You killed my grandma. No.
She would always email, like, Lawrence O'Donnell said.
Oh, that's cute.
It was so cute.
Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Wait a minute, we're talking tech? Yeah. For the next hour, we're talking computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. This is the show where we explain it all in plain English. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign-up required, and that's where everything I talk about is, we put that there. You can go there and get, you know, if you hear something and you want to understand it better or get a link or just reread it or whatever, it's all transcribed. And in fact, there's audio and video as well there after the fact. So that's a great resource for you for this show, but for every show we've done. And we're now in our, 1300s, something like that. This is, 1400s, episode 1451. So somebody's been keeping count. So. They're all up there, techguylabs.com. I was talking some more with Mark from our caller from South Carolina, and he said he did the because of this meltdown in Spectre. We've been hearing about this in the news, and I think it's been a little sensationalized, I'll be honest with you. It's a problem that a bug, a security flaw that affects all microprocessors, not just AMD, not just Intel, but ARM too, all of them. Any modern microprocessor, because it does this speculative branch prediction, is vulnerable to it, and everybody's scrambling to get fixes out. They've actually been working for some time to get fixes out, but they're trying to do, and this is always a problem with these bug fixes, is you can't just say, oh, well, we can fix that, just turn that off. You got to test it. You got to see, well, does that affect anybody? Does that cause problems? And sometimes it does, and you got to mess with it. You don't want to just push this out. At the same time, there's pressure to get it out quickly before the bad guys start writing tools to take advantage of it. This flaw would let somebody who could run a program on your computer, they'd have to be running a program on your computer, would it let them potentially get access to private information like passwords or credit card numbers? Well, actually, to all the information that's stored in your cache. Now, it's a hit or miss kind of thing. So they might get a password, they might not. But that, you know, that's bad, obviously. They do have to get a program to run on your computer, but that's something bad guys do all the time. They trick you by sending you links in email or messaging that you click, and it says, oh, you need to update Flash. Go to this site and download the new Flash, except it's not Flash. It's the bad guy's program, and it's, you know, it's going to try to look into your cache and see if it can find any passwords. At this point, it's not something that is going to be a mass problem, but it's something we do have to fix. So don't your hair does not need to be on fire. You don't need to go crazy. Your operating system is almost certainly getting fixed if it isn't already. Windows and Macintosh have mostly been fixed. I gather there's still some more fixes to come. Linux, in fact, the way we learned about this is that Linux fix was being done kind of in public so people could figure it out. Even operating systems like Dragonfly, FreeBSD, many of those are getting patched. Some are not. You should certainly check with your vendor. But mainstream computer users, you're going to be fine. Your operating systems are going to be fixed. iPhone, fixed. iPad, fixed. I presume, now this is a problem with Android because a lot of Android phones, you know, including, by the way, Mark, yours, because you're so far behind. He said he's on Android 6, Marshmallow. Well, we've gone through Android 7, Nougat, and now we're at Android 8, Oreo. And so he's too up. It's like using Windows Vista. He's two operating systems behind. And he's probably not getting all the latest security updates. Especially on an older phone, you know, it's the manufacturer has to support it. The carrier has to support it. A lot of times on Android phones, you don't get updates. It's one of the real advantages the iPhone has is Apple has been able to force everybody to accept their updates and push them out immediately. Apple pushes them out. So all the iPhones, they're patched. Android phones, maybe not. Check. Get an update. Get whatever updates you can. But to my knowledge, at this point, nobody's taken advantage of this. No exploitation of this flaw. So, but that will come. It's going to take a little more work to really weaponize it. So it's not something to panic about. Frankly, there have been worse flaws. There will be worse flaws. You should always be updating. Now, one of the things Mark said is that he applied the patch on Windows and he got a nasty blue screen of death. Sometimes that does happen with patches. Reboot. Make sure the patch was applied. If it doesn't, redo it. It can happen more. Certainly, it's more likely to happen with a emergency patch. But Microsoft tends to be very careful. It's just they didn't have as much time as usual to test everything. Now, I suspect we're going to see more patches from both Apple and Microsoft. And eventually, Intel, AMD, and the people who make ARM chips like Qualcomm will all be doing patches for those chips, which might be the ultimate fix. So it's a problem. It's not the worst problem we've seen. It's just more widespread than almost anything we've seen in a long time. It affects everybody. I can't think of an exploit that's affected everybody like this before. Moving on to Evelyn in LKView, or Lakeview, I guess it is, Terrace, California. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi there, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I enjoy your show so much. Even though I am technically challenged, I still enjoy listening and learning where I can.
Good. Thank you.
I have a question that is pretty simple probably to you, and I just thought I would run it by you. Sure. I bought a new iPhone 8 through my phone carrier, AT&T, and I got it in the mail, and I have an appointment at the Apple store this early evening to have them help me transfer my old iPhone 5 info onto the new phone and get it started.
Good.
I'm wondering, is this something that I could do myself?
You bet.
My limited...
This is actually my recommendation. So, have you ever connected your iPhone to a computer?
I have.
Yeah, and you have iTunes on that computer?
I do.
Okay. So, one of the things to do is go into iTunes. When you connect your iPhone, open up iTunes. You may have to give approval on your phone. The phone may say, "Do you trust this computer?" You say, "Yes, I trust it. It's my computer." And then go into iTunes, and eventually, this is very hard to find because Apple's iTunes is just a mess. But eventually, mm-hmm. you'll see a little tiny icon on the iTunes menu for that device. You'll see a little iPhone on there, and you click that, and then you'll see your iPhone settings.
And you're talking about my old iPhone that I connect initially?
Yeah.
to the computer?
Because you're going to back, this is, we're going to back it up. That's the idea here, is we're going to take that old iPhone 5. And we're going to connect it to the iTunes, which you've probably done already before. But even if you haven't, you can do it. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to say, you'll see in there, it's going to say backup. There's a backup section. And there's a checkbox that I want you to check that says encrypt this backup. And then it's going to ask you for a password. And the reason you want to do that is that it will not back up passwords and settings unless you say, yeah, encrypt it. It's protecting you. He doesn't want an unencrypted backup of your passwords. But if you say encrypt and you give it a password, don't forget the password. And you can make it something easy to remember. It's nobody's going to be hacking your phone. So remember your password. That way it will make a complete backup of your iPhone 5.
Okay.
Then you get your new iPhone 8. You plug it in. And it'll, but when you start setting up the iPhone, it'll say, do you want to connect to iTunes and restore? And you say, yes. You plug it in. It'll say, ah, I have some backups. Which one would you like to restore from? This one from the iPhone 5. And it will then restore your settings, your data, and even all the apps you have in the folder organization you have. Now, it'll re-download those apps. You'll have to re-download music. But basically, everything's there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to put... sorry, I had to take a break there. But I am still with you. I have not, I have not ended our call. So, well, because I realized I went through that pretty quickly. I want to put this on the show notes, and we'll also put a link to Apple's description of how to do this. But the but the high-level thing is backup to iTunes in an encrypted backup and then restore to the new phone.
Okay.
And that will take all – now, there's some stuff that isn't saved, like music isn't.
Okay.
You'll have to re-download that. If you have it on your computer, you just sync it up again. If it's in the cloud, you just download. Yeah. And the same thing for audiobooks, for movies, TV shows, you know, that kind of big content. And then what it will do is it takes a little longer to finish that restore. After the restore, it will then download the apps. I guess it wants to get the fresh version of all the apps from the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
So it will proceed during, and so that may take a few more hours to just, depending on your internet speed, to download all the apps you have.
Okay, and if I try this and I attempt to do this on my own and I find out that I've hit a roadblock or I'm confused, will I have hurt anything if
no.
I do? So if I do go to the store, if I, just because I know my luck with these sort of things and I don't have a lot of knowledge and I don't trust the knowledge I do have. So if I did have a problem and I do keep my appointment with the geniuses at
They're
Apple,
great. And just
they'll be able to fix anything I may have screwed up.
And you could even say, show me how to do this. They're really good at teaching. This is one of the things
they
Apple...
They are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to avoid a trip to the Glendale Galleria.
I don't blame you. And you don't... And you really, you can do it. There can be odd little... catches in this, you know, but you're not going to harm anything, especially because you're not going to erase your old phone and you don't have anything yet on your new phone. So there's no harm going to be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a try.
I think you can do it.
Right now.
Yeah.
And if you can.
Yeah. And if you wanted to, the Apple, well, again, we'll put this in the show notes, but if you go to support.apple.com or you Google this, how to back up my iPhone or how to, you know, Apple has a whole description of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will look there too.
Yeah.
Sometimes reading things gives it more meaning.
Yeah, because it has images. They actually, if you search for transfer content from your previous iOS device, you'll find it.
Okay.
And it has pictures, and it says how to do it and all of that stuff. They'll mention that there's a way to do it using iCloud backup. They prefer that because they make money on iCloud. That's very slow. So I always say connect it via wire to your computer and do it there. It's much faster. It'll only take about 10, 20 minutes to back up the phone.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I'm going to go and try and do that now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for the vote of confidence.
You
I didn't want to
it.
Try to do it on my own. So.
Evelyn, this is how you become a geek.
That's so true. It's how I've learned everything I know about computers is by trial and error.
You know, somebody told me, and this is awesome, the way Einstein would learn, he would start reading a book, and he would come to a point where he just didn't get it. And the way he solved that is he would start over again. And each time, he would get a little farther in the book. Einstein. Even Einstein. Right. So that's kind of like this. You're chiseling away at how to do this. And eventually, you know, it comes clear and then it's easier and easier.
Right. I understand that. I appreciate that so much. Thank you, Leo. You are awesome. Thanks, I really, Evelyn. Really enjoy your show.
Evelyn was my grandmother's name. I have a soft spot for that name.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you have a happy new year, Leo.
Happy
I look
new
forward
year.
To another year of listening to you.
Thank you so much. You're so kind. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Elia in Santa Monica.
Hello.
Hello. Is it Elia or Elia?
Elia.
Hi, Elia.
Hi.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I'm wondering what you think about online currencies like Bitcoin.
Oh, there you opened a can of worms, didn't you? So these are called cryptocurrencies. Let me see if I can, let me see if I can explain this in a way. I love trying to do this. It's challenging that anybody can understand. And in order to understand what a cryptocurrency is, you kind of have to understand what money is. Now, we all think we understand money because we use it every day, but maybe we don't completely understand it. So let me explain what I think money is. Money is like a battery. Batteries store electricity, right? So you can use it later. You generate electricity, you put it into the battery, it holds it. And then when you want it, you can use it later. Well, that's what money is. But instead of storing electricity, it stores value. And if you think about it, before there was money, I would, chop some wood for you and then you would give me a dozen eggs. You know, it was barter. It was trade. And there was no easy way to say, well, you chopped that wood for me. Here, let me give you an IOU. I owe you some eggs. Maybe you'd write it down on a piece of paper. I owe you some eggs. I'm not going to give them to you today. Okay. You walk away. And then maybe you go to the store and what you really need is a shirt. You go to the store and say, I have this IOU for eggs. Can I trade this for a shirt?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, you just invented money. You've just invented a way to store the energy that you put in chopping the wood, the value, in a piece of paper. That's all money is. And it only works because we all agree that's what that's worth. Now, we kind of think of the U.S. currency or any governmental currency, but let's use the dollar since I'm in the U.S. right now. We kind of think of the dollar as like, somehow really holding value. It doesn't. It's a piece of paper. It's like an IOU, right? It's just a piece of paper. But because we all agree that $1 is worth this, a certain amount of value, it all works. And we kind of have a good sense of what a dollar is worth. But currencies don't have to be issued by governments. There have been other currencies, Canadian Tire, which is a big store up in Canada. They have Canada Tire bucks. They're just little pieces of paper. They're worth something at Canada Tire. But they actually become a currency in some areas of Canada. They, you chop some wood, let me give you 20 Canada Tire bucks that I can go spend at the store or give to somebody else. So they could... That's not a governmental currency. You can't pay your taxes with it. That's really pretty much the only thing you can, do with dollars that you can't do with these other currencies, as long as everybody you're dealing with agrees. Some years ago, a guy or a group of people called themselves Satoshi Nakamoto came up with this idea of creating a new currency that was purely digital. Now, you use digital currencies now, digital dollars, right? I mean, a lot of what you do, almost all the financial transactions we do these days don't involve dollar bills or coins of any kind. They're done digitally with credit cards and so forth. It's just numbers. Well, that's all Bitcoin is. And by the way, there's a lot more than Bitcoin. There's a one called Ripple now that's going through the roof. They're all similar. They're all different, but they are similar in one way. They use something called the blockchain, which is basically a register. If you're going to have a system like this, somebody's got to write down, Elia gave me 50 Bitcoin, and I have now 50 Bitcoin in my wallet. Somehow it has to keep track of that so that the system works. Otherwise, I could just say, no, I have 50 Bitcoin. No, no, you don't, because we have a register. We have the blockchain. And the blockchain is built in such a way that it's very reliable, very robust. So you can't just say, I have 50 Bitcoin. It has to exist in the blockchain. But otherwise, they're very much like any other. They call these, by the way, fiat currencies. The dollar is a fiat currency. Fiat is the Latin word for faith. I believe it's worth something. We all agree. We have a consensus that that's what it's worth. And Bitcoin, one of the problems with Bitcoin, there's a couple of big problems with Bitcoin. One is it's very volatile. When it first started, you know, a Bitcoin is worth a penny or two. There are people who bought, you know, $100 worth of Bitcoin now that are billionaires because it's so volatile. In fact, I bet you even if you're all into Bitcoin, it'd be hard for you to tell what Bitcoin's worth right this instant. You'd have to go check. Could be anything from $15,000 a coin to $20,000, somewhere in there, maybe 14. It's in there. So it's very volatile. That's not good. That's not useful for a currency because we all want to agree on what a dollar's worth, right? And that's one of the reasons people use the U.S. dollar all over the world because it's a pretty stable currency. It doesn't go up and down in value. It's very consistent. Bitcoin, no. So there's the story of the guy who spent two bitcoins on two pizzas. Yeah, $40,000 pizzas. That's because, and that was just a few years ago, the volatility. How much? How many Bitcoin he sent? 10,000 bitcoins on two pizzas? That's a lot of money. At the time, it was about the worth of two pizzas. And this is the problem. This is the problem. In 2014, two pizzas cost you about $20, right? 2017 cost you about 20. 2018, this cost you about $20. Maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but it's roughly the same. It's not $200,000 or $1. Bitcoin, it's crazy. That's problem one with Bitcoin. Problem two with Bitcoin is the cost of a transaction. This is all part of the blockchain. There's a cost to, you know, using a credit card, right? There's a cost to a credit card transaction because somebody's managing that transaction. Well, there's a cost to Bitcoin's transaction. The problem is that cost has gone up and up and up and up. I think it's as much as $20 a transaction now. That means it's useless for buying a $10 pizza. I'll give you a thousandth of a Bitcoin, but it'll cost me $20 to pay to do it. So there have been new coins created along the same lines, not exactly, but similar to Bitcoin. There are many of them. There are hundreds of them. There's even some what we call Bitcoin forks. Some of the people who have been involved in Bitcoin have come up with alternatives to Bitcoin. And there are people who are speculating in these new coins. My son, and I said, don't. But I feel like he's learning. He's 23. He's learning a little bit about how markets work. I said, don't spend anything you can't. You know, don't spend more than $100 on this stuff. But the problem is, it's a little like gambling. He's made money on Ripple, a lot of money, because Ripple's gone up a lot. The guy who invented Ripple, by the way, is now worth $1 billion in Ripple. Trick is getting somebody to give him $1 billion for his Ripple. He might be able to. It's very speculative. It's not the same as U.S. dollars, except that it is, kind of. Does that make sense? It's a way of storing value, but we don't all agree on what that value is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So are you, why are you asking about this? Are you investing in Bitcoin, Elia, or?
Well, when Bitcoin was $200, I downloaded this program so I could mine it and get a certain amount every day.
Did you?
I mean, yeah.
How much Bitcoin do you have?
Well, just recently, about a month ago, I was looking at these thousands of other currencies like Bitcoin, and I saw one called Elixir, which is the same name as my YouTube channel. So I decided to look into it, and I moved parts of my Bitcoin into Elixir.
Yeah.
And Elixir went up like 30 times in the past month, and Bitcoin is just kind of the same.
Right.
So, I mean,
you made some money. How much How much imaginary money do you have now?
Imaginary money?
Yeah.
I have a few thousand Elixir coins.
Wow. Nice.
But,
so, This is why I don't mind my son doing this. Yeah. Elixir is right now at $1.65. So that's a few hundred, you said? $1,600 worth of Elixir? This is good. I mean, you know what? You can play with it. But it's unpredictable, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm kind of confused. Where is the mining coming from?
So you kind of understand the concept. The way that Satoshi Nakamoto set up Bitcoin was people would have to solve math problems, basically factor prime numbers, solve math problems to generate coin. You need to have some way of putting money into the supply. In the U.S., the Federal Reserve Bank and the Mint, they print money, they put it into the supply, but you have to control it because if you put too much money in it, it deflates the value, right? Then the dollar's worth less. If you put too little in, it inflates the value, it becomes more valuable. So Nakamoto came up with a very clever scheme for people to solve these, just as you did. You put a program, your computer ran, and it created Bitcoin at a certain rate. But he also made sure that as more Bitcoin was added to the capitalist, the market, that it made it harder and harder to solve these problems. And at this point, you couldn't just set up a computer and make Bitcoin. You couldn't. It's too hard. So you need a lot of processing power and a lot of electrical power to run the processors. And this is an interesting balance because electrical power costs money. It costs you money to create Bitcoin. In fact, it costs you so much money now to create Bitcoin. The only people who can do it and make money are people who get power for very cheap or free. So almost all the Bitcoin miners now are in China, living next to hydroelectric dams, where the electricity to run their very powerful computers costs almost nothing. Mm-hmm. So almost all the Bitcoin miners are in China now. They used to, I mean, I know people who mined Bitcoin, but it's not economical anymore because electricity costs too much.
Yes.
So that's basically how all of these systems work, with some variation. So there's more there. In other words, there's more Elixir being created as well. But you got to do it so that it keeps you're trying to keep the value stable. This is a big problem for Bitcoin. It's so volatile that the only people who are interested in Bitcoin now are speculators who are hoping it will go up and they'll make a lot of money. And that's, you know, always a risk to get involved in markets like that because you can also lose all your money. It's very volatile and very unpredictable. Now, I think at this point we're in a cryptocurrency bubble, so that all the cryptocurrencies are basically going up because everybody says, well, I don't want to buy Bitcoin. What can I buy? I'll get some Ripple. I'll get some Ethereum. I'll get some Litecoin. I'll get some Elixir. But there are lots of issues with this. Lots of issues. Ooh, hee-haw. Look at his. He's here, ladies and gentlemen. Our traveling man. He's been all over the place since we talked last year. Johnny Jett from johnnyjett.com. Doesn't look like you're home, John.
No, I'm not. Happy New Year
from
Hawaii.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I should have known those puka beads you're wearing.
Kuki. I think it's K-U.
Oh, those aren't puka shells. Those are cookie shells.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. You know, I thought I knew how to pronounce all the Hawaiian words, and I'm watching the weather this morning.
I love Hawaii.
And the woman saying Oahu, the island of Oahu. And I'm like, I thought it was Oahu. So,
where are you?
I'm calling from the Ritz-Carlton Waikiki Beach.
But I just spent on Oahu.
On Oahu.
Oahu. Yeah. Oh, are you having fun?
Oh, yeah.
Did you bring the family?
Sure did, of course. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So we spent Christmas in Toronto.
Nice.
Freezing cold.
Freezing, yeah.
And then we flew to L.A. for the night and then came here. When I checked in for the flight, the guy at American Airlines is like, you're Johnny Jett. I know that voice. I listen to you every week.
Nice.
His name was Elwood. Real nice guy. Nice. And
hi, Elwood.
Nice. I was like, I won't forget that name. Don't worry. And anyway, then we went to spent the first few nights at the Royal Hawaiian, which is an amazing hotel.
That's the classic hotel.
The second oldest hotel. The Surfrider is the oldest. But, you know, I was able to do it for cheap because I cashed in SBG points, Starwood points. And I did it a long time ago. Back in September, I got it. And it's $900 a night, but if you use your points, it's 25,000 points a night. But if you book four nights, you get one free, so it's really 20,000 points. And that was amazing. And then I made a deal with the SBG in November to have them kind of cover some of it. And now here we are.
I have a feeling you have a lot of points on a lot of different programs, I would guess.
Well, I always tell people to always sign up for the freaking flyer program or the freaking travel program.
Yeah.
Even if you're just doing one flight, because you never know if you're going to fly them again or, you know.
I was on American the other day. That's how we got to the Caribbean. And they were really pushing a credit card. They said 60,000 miles. So I signed up. I said, well, I'll take the miles.
Oh, my God. You did.
Yeah. Was that wrong?
I was always wondering if anyone signed up. And I asked the flight attendants because the flight attendants
get
paid.
I think a lot of people do. I know they get paid because they're pushing it like crazy. She said, my husband and I did it, and we got a free trip to – and I was like, you're clearly on commission.
I think they make $50 per transaction.
Oh,
I'm not
no wonder.
Sure they make.
Wow.
But it drives me nuts when they make these announcements in the middle of flight. It's fine to do it in the beginning or at the very end.
On and on and on, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're really pushing it. But
I signed up. I figured, yeah, and then you get, you know, the big one for me is you can show the card and get on first, and it drives me crazy. All these people with these credit cards are getting on the plane first, so I said, I'm going to get me one of these credit cards. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, I don't know what zone number you now get on.
Maybe not one.
Yeah.
But you get
number one, the first is Concierge Key, which is like you have to spend $50,000 a year on them. And then it's Executive Platinum, which I am. I'm the highest, 100,000 miles or more a year. And then it keeps going down. It goes to nine zones.
Wow.
But I think it's five you get to board, which is not that great with that credit card.
No, I was four anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a step down.
And if you're first class, you get zone one, too.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe I just got suckered because you pay $95 a year for that credit card.
Yes. Actually, Executive Platinum gets zone two. I forgot.
There's a lot to work here. That's why we have Johnny Jett to figure this all out. He joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. You got something for us?
Yeah, I sure do. Actually, speaking of credit cards, so, you know, some people don't have the credit to get a credit card. And that's the way that people buy their plane tickets and things like that. But if you don't, there's actually a website that was started last year, a service called Air Affordable, AirAffordable.com. So what these guys do, they don't check your credit report. And if there's a flight that you want to take, you go through whatever your favorite travel site is, you take a screenshot, you send it to them, and then they will let you pay in installments. So one of my buddies wrote this article back in July, end of July. And if you wanted a flight on December 3rd, a $1,000 ticket, you had to pay $126 every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And they charge a 10 to 20% fee.
Ooh.
And then they give you your ticket once you pay off the last payment. But it's a great option for people who do not have the credit to get a credit
card. Kind of buying an air ticket on the layaway plan.
Yeah. So there's – but it's a very interesting site. And obviously I would say use a credit card as long as you can pay it off in full. But if you don't have the credit, this is a good alternative. But yeah, with that credit card that you got on the American Airlines, you have to pay it off in full every month like every other travel
card. I always do. Anytime I get a credit card, I make sure I can pay it off. Otherwise,
it's not worth it.
The interest rates are insane.
They're insane, like 24% or something like that. So
Airfordable, AirFordable, airfordable.com.
Yes. And I got another site for you. Actually, you know, a lot of people are delayed this week because of that nasty storm on the East Coast. And I wrote a post on what to do, you know, in weather delays and flight cancellations. And there's a couple apps in there. But so one of them, and this doesn't has nothing to do with weather. So if there's weather, you don't get any money. But let's say you're on a flight to or from Europe or in Europe and you're delayed by 2 hours or more and it's mechanical or, the airline doesn't have enough staffing, you can get some money. And so this site out here, this one's called GetService.com. Although there's another one I prefer is airhelp.com. But both of these guys, what they do is they'll go out and get the money for you, and then you pay them a percentage. Get Service charges 30%, and AirHelp charges 25% of whatever they get you. But let's say one time I was delayed, and this could be 2 years ago. If you had a flight 2 years ago that was delayed and and you still have the information, you can still get your money. If as long as it was to and from Europe. And one time I was flying from Budapest to Toronto via London, and there was a mechanical issue in Budapest, and we missed our connection in London, and we had to spend the night. And I was reading about this in the New York Times once, and then I just all of a sudden signed up for it. And 6 weeks later, I got a check for $900.
So this is not for flights in the U.S.?
No, it's Europe. The Europe has really strict
laws. Do we have – we don't have laws like that in the U.S.? Huh?
Not like this, no. We don't.
All right. So this is for – if you're traveling internationally, you should know about airhelp.com.
Yep, or it gets service. The thing about get service, which I don't like, is that you have to give them access to your Gmail or Hotmail account, and they scan your emails for you.
Well, that's kind of nice because then you don't have to remember. Anything. Right.
Exactly. But and they also charge you more for that. That's why they charge you 5% more. But and it only works with Gmail or Hotmail, but they do charge a little bit of a fee. AirHelp is what I used, and it was only 25%, and it's a little bit more work. But
you know what you do? And this is probably a good idea in general, is create a special Gmail account for like reservations and things like that.
That's a great idea.
You know, have a travel Gmail account and then let it have access to that. That's fine.
I should have thought of that myself.
Yeah. Gmail lets you do – in fact, sometimes this will work too. Gmail lets you add to your Gmail – say it's johnnyjet@gmail.com. You can say johnnyjet+anyword@gmail.com. And that – I guess that wouldn't be helpful in this case, but it lets you have unique addresses and you can then filter on those addresses. But from Gmail's point of view, it's all johnnyjet@gmail.com. The plus is anything after the plus is ignored.
Okay.
Isn't that weird? That's a useful tool.
Yeah. That is, and if we want some more tips, I have time to talk about how to, you know.
Save it for next week because we're out of time, but I think we got a lot of tips in there. And of course, if you go to johnnyjet.com, there's more. He's got articles on all sorts of great stuff. And don't forget to subscribe to his travel newsletters and follow him at Johnny Jet on Twitter, at Johnny Jet on Instagram. See how long you'll be in Hawaii.
Actually, we got to check out soon.
Coming home?
I got another destination.
Of course
to go
not.
To.
What is home? Johnny Jet has no idea. We'll talk to you next week, John, from wherever. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Wow. Internet service provider in the Northeast. It's called Armstrong Zoom. They have about 1 million subscribers in the Northeast, and they don't like people using file sharing services. The ISP says, if we catch you, we'll slow down your internet service. Okay, well, you know. By the way, there's no due process. They just do it. They don't have to prove that you were doing anything wrong. They just think you are. They'll slow you down. And they warn you. They send a letter out saying, if we slow you down, you may not be able to use your webcam or your Nest thermostat. Which is actually kind of a severe threat right now in New England where it's frigidly cold. Actually, they're not New England. They're Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Maryland. But temperatures will be under freezing in all of those areas. So new way for internet service providers to crack down on people using file sharing services, whether they're using them legally or not, or whether they're even using them or not, will freeze you to death. That's called freezing them out. 8888, ask Leo. Wow. Chris from Encinitas, California. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I have a iTunes question, and you know what a mess that is.
Oh, man. Okay, go ahead. I'll do my best.
Okay. So I have an iPod Classic, old iPod.
Yeah.
That I have, it's like 160 gigs.
No, I went out, when they discontinued it, I ran out and bought one. It was the largest iPod they ever made. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. But here's my problem. Well, a little background. I opened it with a PC account, okay? But anyways, my hard drive died. I, of course, had no backup, so... everything is on my iPod, but I can't, I know you know iTunes, so I need a safe way to get my music from my iPod onto another computer.
Is it a Mac or a PC?
Well, that was another question. I have a PC and I have a Mac.
Okay.
But
so the only reason I ask is there are programs on both sides to do this. Apple doesn't let you do that because of the music industry. When they saw the iPod, the first thing they said is, well, wow, you know, all you have to do is bring it to your neighbors, and there they have 160 gigs of music free. So they don't let you just plug it into any computer and copy the files off, even though, truthfully, they're right there, and it doesn't take much to get to them. So depending on which computer you use, there are a number of programs that will let you copy stuff off of iTunes. The one we've used for years is called Sanuti, which is iTunes.
Sanuti.
Sanuti is easy to remember. It's iTunes backwards.
Oh, okay.
Sanuti. Now, that's for Macintosh only. But I guess it doesn't really matter as far as you are concerned. But I'll give you some Windows songs as well. There are a lot of programs that will do this. There's one called iExplorer. Because the truth is, Apple only pays lip service to not copying it. It's actually still visible. And so you can actually, even with some simple tools, copy the files off. The problem is the file names aren't the song names. They match them up to a database of song names. So what you want is a program that's smart enough to see the files, see the file name, match it to the database, and copy it over with that new name. But from now on, you need to back up.
Absolutely. Oh, I learned my lesson. Well, this is the second or third time I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, an iPod is a terrible backup solution. So Sanuti on the Mac, iExplorer on Mac or PC. There's one called PodTrans that is on both as well from imobile.com. All you have to do is Google transfer music from iPod. You'll see a number of them. They all work roughly the same. It's actually not a hard thing to do.
My biggest concern is just the safety, because I have, well, the safety meaning I can't, there's stuff on there that
you don't want to lose it. I know. So what will happen is it'll load the iPod as if it's a hard drive. And it won't modify it in any way. It won't touch the iPod and any of these programs. They just mount it so they can see it, and they copy the files off of it. So
I won't have to go in and say, like, how iTunes will, what did they call it? Like, not update, but there was something that it would.
The iTunes match. You don't have to worry about that. Stuff you recorded that you gave a name to, all the metadata, all of that stuff's preserved. Apple just puts in a separate file. So these programs like Sanuti just take that data and match it up and then copy the file. So everything will look the same as it does in your iTunes. It'll all be preserved. Sanuti. I just like the name Sanuti. You can do it. There are YouTube videos on how to do it without any software. Because you don't. But that it's a little easier to use software just to match the songs up. Gary on the line in Buffalo, New York. Hello, Gary. Now, let me ask you, you're used to the cyclone thing, right? This is every year for you.
Well, you know what? We're just a little west of that. We get it coming from the west across the lake.
So it's warmed up then.
No, it's cold. What happened was it forced all that cold Canadian air onto us.
I'm sorry.
Sucked it all in on us. So we haven't been over zero today. But, yeah, it's going up to 40 later in the week.
Oh, gosh. So, spring's coming.
Yeah.
Is there enough snow on the ground that it won't all melt, even though it's over freezing?
No. The problem is, if we get rain, it's going to be a mess.
Oh, slush. And then it freezes again, and it's the worst.
Yeah.
The worst.
Yeah, so that'll be the worst thing if we get rain. We're better off just getting snow.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you. So what can I do for you today?
Here's what I did. SSD 500 gigabytes were on sale last week, so I bought one and put it in my desktop as my operating drive.
Have you noticed a difference?
Yes, quite a bit.
Yes. Let me put it this way. These are solid-state drives. They don't have any moving parts, just like your flash memory in a camera or iPod. And by the way, it's the best upgrade you can make to a computer. Now that the prices are starting to fall, I don't buy a computer without an SSD. Let's put it that way.
Well, what I did was I had it. Then I had a 1 gigabyte hard drive for my data.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. So you get both.
I bought an SSD 1 gigabyte to try.
Oh. And
it, a little bit of a speed difference. Not as much as when I put the 500.
It's loading the operating system, boot time, and then running programs. Data can be on a slower drive.
Well, that was my question. Now, that SSD, I'm now reading at Dell that they wear out.
Yeah, no, they don't.
No, they don't?
No, they don't. Now we've had them around long enough. There's potentially they do, but they do a lot of clever things to keep that from happening. We've had them around long enough to see that they are, in fact, every bit as reliable as spinning drives. And, in fact, I think more so because there's no moving parts. Do not worry about wearing out your SSD. It's going to last as long as a regular hard drive. Years. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All drives wear out, but so what they do is they do something called wear leveling, which keeps them from the only time you could wear it out is if for some reason you were using a program that wrote to the same cell over and over and over again. But it doesn't. The operating system keeps that from happening. So they're just as robust and reliable, maybe even more so than spinning drives. Don't worry about that.
All right. That was what I was concerned about. I thought maybe I'd go back to the cheap hard drive for the
Now, is it a laptop or a desktop?
It was a desktop.
So what you could do is keep the old drive, make that your D drive, boot and run programs from your C drive, the SSD, and put all your data on the slower spinning drive. That's a very common use because you don't need the speed. You don't see the big difference with data.
Yeah, that's it. I didn't see it, so I thought I'd...
Yeah. Mostly because that's not... You're doing a lot of writing. Now, if you were using data in such a way, like maybe editing video or music or something, if you're using it in a way that did do a lot of reading and writing, then an SSD would be faster. But most of the time, how do you use a data drive? You load in a document, you work on it for a while, and you save it out. If it loads 50% faster, big deal.
Yes, I did. I did see. Actually, you know what, though? I saw a difference in is when I accessed that desktop from my laptop. There seems to be a big difference in the I use a remote desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And when I use remote desktop, I'm sitting with my laptop and I access the desktop. There seems to be a big difference in speed and loading information using that system for some reason. Than it was when I had the non-SSDs in there.
That I don't know why that would be. SSDs won't make that faster because that's dependent on your network speed. But they shouldn't slow it down either.
Yeah, they shouldn't slow it down.
The SSD is much faster than the network speed. So you won't see a benefit with an SSD on a network connection because your network is too slow. Yeah.
All right. So you think I'm safe with that S? I'm not going to wear that D to drive out.
Let me put it this way. I don't buy computers with spinning disks anymore. I just don't. They're too slow.
No.
Everything I buy has an SSD. I trust them. Now, you always want to back up. It's not like they're more reliable. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're not less reliable. Let's put it that way. You always want to back up.
No, I follow your 3 backup system. I got Carbonite and ID drive.
Perfect. As long as you're doing that. And that's the big difference, frankly, is cost per gigabyte. The solid state drives are more expensive. So that's the main reason people still use spinning drives for data. It doesn't make that big a difference in speed. And the cost per gigabyte is so much lower, you can get a 4 terabyte spinning drive as a data drive and a 512 gigabyte SSD, and that'll save you money. Because you're not going to buy a terabyte or 4 terabyte. Well, you can't get a 4 terabyte SSD, but you're not going to buy a 4 terabyte, even if you could get it, because the cost is so high. That's changing, though. You know, how much did that? You bought a 512 for how much?
$140.
Yeah, that's a lot less than they used to be. But to be fair, you can get a terabyte for $80. Spinning drive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's still more than twice as expensive.
One last question. It came with a program. It was a Samsung Evo, and it came with a program. And one of the options is to over-provision it. Should I do that?
I don't think you need to, But that's a response to what it'll do is make the drive size smaller. And it's a response to this potential for wearing out cells. I wouldn't, unless you're doing something weird. But the idea is because so wear leveling means you write to random cells and you make sure every cell gets an equal number of reads and writes. So no one cell gets worn off. If you over provision, that's even better because then you can spread the writes out even more. And so no one cell gets even less writes. But I don't think it's necessary. I don't use over provisioning on any of my drives.
The only thing I have that's always reading that drive is the X1 search.
Reading's fine. It's writing that wears it out.
Oh, it's writing. Okay. All right.
And that's why it's perfect for an operating system. It's perfect for apps. Those don't change much. Data is what gets written and caches, paging, swap files. So if you did use, if you really wanted to kind of preserve that, I don't do this, but you could put the swap file on a spinning drive would probably be a good idea. But most computers nowadays have so much memory, the swap file doesn't even occupy much space, so...
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think we don't have to worry. That's the good news. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. I mean, we got lots to talk about. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you've got some technology that's giving you the heebie-jeebies, let me help you out. 888-827-5536. Everything we talk about on every show. Available on our website. And by the way, audio and video from those shows is also available. TechGuyLabs.com. And that's free. That's free. Thanks to our fabulous sponsors who are very kindly support all of this, including the website. TechGuyLabs.com. They pay so you don't have to. John in Westchester, New York. Hey, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Happy New Year, Leo.
Happy Bomb Cyclone, John.
Yeah, talk about heebie-jeebies. You're an international traveler.
Yeah.
How do you protect your information?
Good question.
CBP now.
Yeah.
Asking more people to open up their devices.
So
and there's nothing illegal on my device.
No, but I understand. In fact, I just saw statistics that the CBP inspections of phones and hard drives have gone up considerably over the last year. However, I have never been stopped or bothered in any way. And I travel out of the country two or three times a year at least. So I don't know, it's only a small percentage of people get inspected. If you're really worried, I'll tell you the things to worry about. If they take your phone and go into another room, not good.
Yeah, then they cloned it.
We don't know what they've done. They could put something on it that monitors you from then on.
That is correct. So if they take it away, you have to throw the phone away.
At that point, I think you have to throw the phone away or at least take it to somebody expert enough to really wipe it.
Not worth it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a really good question. I've kind of punted. I just take my computers with me and my phones with me and hope nothing bad happens. First of all, they have the right to do this. You're entering the country or exiting the country. All countries reserve the right to do this. The courts have held that you are not. Well, the ACLU is suing. I mean, it's not completely clear, but in general, it's believed that you don't have the same Fourth Amendment rights that you would if you were just sitting in your house. You give up some privileges by saying, I want to exit the country and reenter. We'll wait and see what those court decisions do to protect us. But until then, the CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, is acting as if they have the absolute right to inspect everything you've got, including all your electronics. We've heard stories of them taking phones out of the room, and that's where you worry. Same thing with a laptop. I'd worry even more with a laptop. They take it out of the room. And while I don't see any reason why they would do this, but I guess if you were on a list. And we know you can get on these lists accidentally. But if you're on a list, they could say, hey, we got one. Let's put some remote monitoring software on there. And you would not know it's there. And they'd be monitoring you from then on.
So if they take your device, you're saying you get rid of the device, phone or laptop.
Well, it depends how scrupulous you want to be. I believe you could wipe the phone and laptop and probably be okay. But we also know there are things they could do to the firmware that would survive across a wipe.
That is correct. They could go pre-boot.
Yeah, it depends how. Yeah, it depends how hard they want to work.
That's the NSA type stuff.
Yeah, it is NSA type stuff. Yeah. But I will also say this: if the NSA is after you, you're pretty much screwed anyway.
Well, I'm not saying the NSA is after you. I'm saying that the NSA gives their tools to
right.
the CBP.
CBP probably has those tools. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm saying that.
The real concern is, I know you're not a criminal. The real concern is a false positive, that they, for some reason, identify you as a criminal and then decide to act. And I'll be honest, when a government decides you're a criminal,
you're trouble.
There's not much you can do. You're kind of out of luck.
So let's just say, so theoretically, they take your phone, you open it up for them, and they look at your password manager. And it's got all your stuff there.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, you have hundreds of passwords.
What the ACLU says is that you do have your rights against search and seizure, even as somebody transiting the borders. And they are suing. And you can go to their page. I'll put a link on there. They say you should fight it. So they have a whole page, what to do when encountering law enforcement at airports and other ports of entries in the United States. It is illegal, according to the ACLU, for law enforcement officers to perform any stops, searches, detentions, or removals based solely on race, religion, national origin, gender, ethnicity, or political beliefs. However, law enforcement officers at the airport and the border generally have the authority to search all bags and ask you questions. What's the gray area? Well, is your electronic stuff your bags or what? And that's where the lawsuit happens. So yeah, they do have a page, and ACLU's advice, I'm not sure if I'd take this, is to fight. Say, no, you can't have my phone. Where's your warrant?
They're going to take the phone. You can't stop them from taking the phone.
Well, you can say no. What they might do and what they seem to have done in other cases is say, okay, but you can't leave the airport until you give us the phone.
No, they cannot stop a U.S. citizen from coming back to the country.
Well, they can keep you in airport jail for a while.
Well, so, yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. So at that point, the ACLU has a phone number to call. You can ask for legal help. This is why I just come and go and hope I don't get caught. And I think that's kind of the CBP says fewer than 1% of people get these kinds of extended searches. So I would read the ACLU. I have mixed feelings about this. They're not doing it because they're out to, you know, hey, I'm out to get John. I want to get John. He looks like a bad character. They're trying to protect us. But we also, as citizens, have rights to privacy and rights against illegal search and seizure. And so, you know, we got to assert our own rights as to the extent we're willing to. I don't want to spend time in airport jail. I want to go home. If it's an iPhone 10, $1,000 iPhone, I'm not throwing it away.
I've already decided I'm taking a dumb phone. I'm taking a dumb phone now on.
Yeah.
No data. Just a phone.
There are password managers that have this interesting. They have interesting modes. I think it's 1Password has a mode that you put it in, the travel mode, where only your most important passwords are on it. It erases everything else. So even if they do seize your phone, they don't get much. And then when you get home, you resync it. You say, okay, I'm not traveling anymore. And all your passwords go flooding back in. That's one solution too.
I don't want them to have any passwords.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So take a dumb phone.
Yeah, and then I have to be really. I have to bone up and remember them in my head for the most important thing.
I know. It's an interesting conundrum, an interesting problem you raise. Like I say, I have yet to have a problem. If somebody has, I would love it if you'd call and let us know what happened. We've read accounts of American citizens being stopped, being detained, losing control of their phone. They take it into another room. You don't know what they're doing. Same thing with a laptop. You don't know what they're doing. This has happened. Hasn't happened to me. It doesn't happen that often. But as I said, the minute you're under suspicion of from the federal government, all bets are off, whether it's rightful or wrongfully. And it is too bad that we live in this situation. I don't know what the answer is. Yes, take a dumb phone. Don't take a computer. Or if you do, sanitize the computer first. And then if they do happen to borrow it, sanitize it after. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for spinning the discs today. And the return of the phone ranger, Heather Homan, taking your calls. I notice everybody's calling just to want to talk to Heather. They all want to talk to you, Heather. Walter Tallahassee, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Walter.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I am well. Did you get any snow in Tallahassee?
We got an eighth of an inch at my house, combination sleet with just a little dusting of snow towards the end of the front going through.
You don't ever
yes,
think
we got snow for the first time in like years and years.
Amazing.
And years.
Amazing.
Yeah, and of course, for us, that's quite an event here in North Florida. Well, anywhere in Florida, it's an event.
Sure, sure.
Well, I've got a couple of questions for you. In November, I inherited a website for the National Guard unit that I started. Another man had done the website, and he passed away from Parkinson's disease.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's hosted by West Host. And I'm kind of struggling with them to get all the business side switched over to me as an account holder. But the real problem I'm foreseeing is that he did the website in Expression Web. I think he started out with one, then he went to two, and Parkinson's caught up with him just as he was starting to transfer it over to Web 4, Expression Web 4. And, of course, Microsoft is no longer supporting it. It's free, but it's evidently getting a little chancy. And I'm looking for something that a neophyte, I mean a real beginner, can use to transfer the website to a new expression or whatever it would be, and then continue developing it and put pictures on it and all that kind
of
thing.
Yeah. So a couple of things. When you use these programs, Dreamweaver, Expression Web, Microsoft's Front Page, to a greater or lesser degree, they generate a standard web page, mostly lesser. And to the degree that it's not standard is the degree that it's going to be very difficult to move to another platform. And you're right, Expression Web is like 11 years old now. You don't know how much longer you'll be able to use it. It might get a little rocky. And this was the case with Front Page, which Microsoft also discontinued. Websites generated, it was great when it, you know, you just did it, but if you created a website with Front Page, it used so many proprietary extensions that you couldn't very easily move it to anything else. You were just kind of stuck with Front Page.
Mm-hmm, right.
So Expression Web, which is just a stripped down version of Front Page, I'm not familiar with the code it generates, but my guess is it's probably similarly problematic. However, you should look and see if there's an export to HTML command that would then enable you to kind of, at least with some effort, move it to just standard HTML is the markup language the web uses. And that's standard, and you can use a variety of editors for that. It's kind of what I'm thinking. Are you going to move it away from the original web host, or are you going to stick with West Host?
I'm going to stick with West Host for probably a couple of years. I went ahead and prepaid it because I knew this was going to be a struggle.
So ask them what they recommend, if they have a tool that they use, a site builder tool, and if you can move from Expression Web to their tool. That might be the solution.
Okay.
As long as you're going to stay with them. They would, I mean, they're inexpensive. They're kind of a lot of hosts like this. And most hosts like this offer some simple tool to create a website. Yeah, they have a so-called website builder.
Okay.
So, and they also will, if you probably don't want to spend a lot of money on this site, but if you wanted to, they probably could also recommend a consultant who could help you with a transition.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of a problem. Retired and
You don't want to spend money on this. Yeah, the worst case scenario, you can just take what the website looks like and just kind of copy and paste it into their website builder, and you probably can get pretty close. How many pages on this website?
There's, I
is
really
it really
don't
big?
Know. No, it's not very big at
okay.
all.
Okay. So, you know, you can look at the site and, in effect, download the HTML. It's, unless he used a plug-in that, you know, it's possible that there are plug-ins that, you know, for forms and stuff like that, those things would break. That's what FrontPage did. It was a little annoying. They used special plugins. And those wouldn't work. They're not standard. You want to stick with standard stuff.
Yes. Well, I've got Lauren Rand Hendrickson's Sam's Teach Yourself. And
I
started looking at some of the links he had, he was like saying, well, don't use Expression 4 because it's going under, you know, it's not going to be maintained. Now, what he's now with, I couldn't find anything that looked like it was supporting websites. It supposedly does. So I think I'll take your advice. I'll just do some
they suggest. And if it's not a massive site, you can just copy the content over.
Okay.
And what you'll probably end up using their site designer, which is not going to be the greatest either. It's going to be similar to – it won't be – probably won't have any proprietary extensions in it, but it's also going to be less flexible. But at least the site you create, you'll be able to then take somewhere else if you needed to.
All right. Well, we'll give that a shot and see what happens.
Okay. Good luck.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah. The web has changed so much from the days of your site and many sites and my site. It used to be that if you wanted a website, you get a web server, which is just a computer running a special program, Apache or Nginx or some sort of program called a web server. And what that program is very simple. All it does is accepts incoming requests from somebody. Somebody at home has a browser, and that's what your browser does. It makes a request to the computer that's run by your hosting company. It says, could you give me that website? The web server is the one that takes the files on the drive, packages them up in a way that, you know, kind of looks like a web page and sends it out. It's, you know, it's like email almost. It's like a messenger. It says, okay, yeah, let me get you that site, and sends it out. And you click a link on your browser. The browser then sends whatever address is attached to that link back to the server. The server says, oh, yeah, you want that? Okay, packages that up, sends it out. It's very straightforward. The thing that we're talking about here is what those things that it's packaging up are, the files, the pages, and what they're constructed in. And in the old days, it's very simple. It was just constructed in something called HTML, hypertext markup language, which looked kind of like English with some funny characters in it. Formatting information, like make this bold. Here's a picture here. Make it left, justified, things like that. And then mixed in with those markup, special markup marks, brackets and things, slashes, were the actual text. Hello, welcome to my page. Angle bracket slash B, angle bracket. This is all kind of weird looking, but you can kind of read it. We've gone a long way from that. But that's probably what's generated by that Microsoft's Expression Web and by the site designer that the host is running. Is something like that. It's what they call static web pages. Almost any web page you go to, including our web page, techguylabs.com, is generated by a content management system that takes the content completely separate, takes files that describe the layout and mushes them together. So the content looks almost like pure English. It's the content management system that mushes them together and sends them out to the server. That's a more modern way of doing it, and not that there's any point to describing that because you're not going to be using it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. But that's how WordPress works. That's how Squarespace works. Basically, they have a server, but they also have a content management system. And then, so if it's in layers, here's the public internet is at my eye level. Then at my nose level, just a little below that is the server. At my mouth level, just a little below that is the content management system. And then below that is the data. And the data consists generally of two things. Style sheets that describe how the data is laid out. Templates, and the content itself. The content's usually managed in a database. So the database has, you know, an entry for page one. This is the content in page one. And in there, in that data, is markup information, but it's simplified compared to HTML. It's basic markup information. The content management system pulls that from the database, has on record all the style sheets and the templates, mushes it into the template, and then sends it out. And the advantage of doing it this way to the server, which then sends it to you, the advantage of doing it this way is that you can change the templates and style sheets, and it doesn't impact the content at all. In the old days, you'd have to edit the content files and change stuff. That's crazy. That's nuts. So database engine with content, style sheets, templates, merged together content management system, outputs a full blob of page, which then the server sends out like that. His system is a little simpler. There's really only two levels. There's the website content, which goes to the server, which goes out. It is generated statically by the program, the site designer or expression host. In fact, you can run that locally on your computer, generate the page, and then upload them. So the server doesn't have anything but this already rendered blob that then it sends to the sends out. So that's the difference. And in Expression Web Engine doesn't do it on demand, does it beforehand. These other content management systems are actually rendering the page on demand. So they're a little more flexible. They can change all the time. If you wanted to change a page when you're using a site builder or Expression Web, you would actually fire it up, change the page, save the file, upload it to the server, and then it's changed. It's a little bit more complicated. I don't know why I even got into that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's talk height. The web has changed so much. And it's funny. This is what happens in technology in general. We get notions of how things work. And then they don't work like that at all anymore. and then that means that our understanding is very brittle. So that's one thing that's changed a lot is how web pages work. Very different. In the old days with things like Front Page, Microsoft Expression Web, you would sit at your computer and create a web page, which you would then upload to the server. And it's done. Then the server serves it. Almost every website you go to these days, the page is created on the fly the minute somebody asks for it. There's a content management system sitting underneath the server that says, all right, where's the data? And gets the most recent data. You change the data only, right? All right, where's the templates, the design? And then it merges them and sends them out. And it does that on the fly. And that there's a good reason for that. It means that you can very rapidly update a web page, change it all the time. Because all you have to do is change the little items in the database that reflect the content of the page. With Expression, it'd be much more complicated. If you wanted to change something every 5 minutes, you'd be loading up Expression on your computer every 5 minutes and uploading new versions. It'd take forever. It'd be crazy. But that's, I think, how a lot of us think about how the web is created. That's old-fashioned. WordPress, Squarespace, Blogger, Blogspot, they're all content management systems. They all do that on the fly. They render pages as they're asked for, not so much static pages. Frankly, even that's getting a little old-fashioned. You go to a modern site like Quartz.com, which is running on WordPress or New York Times or one of the modern news sites, and they're running pretty sophisticated software all the time that's constantly modifying how the site looks. Might even be doing, this is very common, sending different sites to different people. They call it A-B testing. Well, let's see if this headline works better than that headline. Half the people get this headline, half the people get that headline. And then measure the success. Things like that. That's happening all the time. 8888 Ask Leo. I don't know. You don't need to know this. But, if you're interested. Bob. But there's a lot. I know a lot of stuff no one needs to know. Bob in Elmwood, New Jersey. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Hello. WA2SQQ here in New Jersey.
W6TWT. Good to talk to you.
I got a weird problem. I bought a new the iPad 10.5 Pro, I guess about 6 months ago. Everything was working fine. And about two updates back, YouTube started doing some really strange things. I can open YouTube. It plays fine, anything I've subscribed to. if I use their search option, that little magnifying glass, and search for something, it'll come back with, you know, dozens of matches. But any one of those matches, if you go to select it and click on it, it will not connect. It's as if the links are there, but they just don't work. If I take the name of one of them, go into Google, type it in, naturally Google will find the same thing, and it works fine from there. But the search option in the app has just stopped working. I uninstalled the app, reinstalled it, and it works for one or two searches and then goes right back to the same problem.
Huh. That's interesting.
And my wife...
Are you doing it in the YouTube app or in Safari?
No, in the YouTube app itself. And I've got the same app installed on my wife's iPad, which is a generation older.
And it works.
And it works just fine on there.
If you were watching a video, you know how on the YouTube webpage there's stuff on the right, you know, next.
That works fine.
That works. It's only when you do a search.
Yeah, only things that I search for using the magnifying glass in the top right.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's a puzzle. The question is it the YouTube app? Is it your internet service? Is it the iPad itself?
Well, that's my next thing. I think I'm going to go over to Apple because the store is only a few miles away and see what they have to say. It's not the service because I've tried it here. I mean, I'm on Verizon Fios. And my wife's works fine. I took it.
The test would be if you had another exactly the same 10.5-inch iPad and clicked that link, and if the same thing happened, then it would be the iPad. If a different thing happened, I'm sorry, vice versa. If the same thing happened, it would be something other than the iPad. Maybe, you know what, it's complicated. The problem is all this interacts, and it could be there's something in the YouTube app itself that doesn't work right with the iPad networking. I'm not sure. I have seen that behavior. It's not completely unfamiliar to me. And in fact, I use an iPad 10.5. Love it, the iPad Pro.
Oh, yeah.
If I had it with me, I could try it. I don't think that happens all the time for me. But I have seen it happen where you just kind of spins and you never get the site. You never get the video.
And I've been hoping that YouTube would come up, you know, with an update. And I've been watching, and you know, every second, third day, I'll check my updates. And they haven't done it. I tried doing a Google search on it, and are a lot of references about links won't play, but they're all 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. It feels like something that maybe comes and goes. Let me ask, we've got a few hundred people in the chat room. Any of you in the chat room have iPad Pros, the new 10.5-inch iPad Pros? And can you try it and just see if you have trouble? Remember, you're searching, you're in YouTube, in the YouTube app, using the search magnifying glass, searching for a video, and then can you click on the search results and get it to play? I've seen it not play. I mean, I'm familiar with what you're describing.
Yeah.
I don't think it happens all the time, or I would have had the same question as you. What's going on? You're using iOS 11, of course. Which version of iOS 11?
Whatever the newest one is.
You keep it up to date, yeah, which would be, I think, 11.1.2.
Whatever they push, I'll take it.
Yeah. Mike B is saying no problems on his iPad Pro. Same thing. It's not happening to him. But at the same time, you can't just say, well, it's iOS 11 or it's YouTube app or it's internet service, but it could be some weird interaction between the three. I think I like your idea of taking it to the Apple store.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. I'll just make an appointment and, you know, go over there one night during the week.
But yeah. Short term, here's one thing I would try.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, in settings, there is a reset network settings.
Okay.
It doesn't delete any data. It just it just kind of refreshes your network settings. This is on Wi-Fi, right? Not on LTE?
Right.
Yeah. So it refreshes the network settings. That might fix it. You could also delete the YouTube app and reinstall it.
I've tried that already.
And that did not fix it.
What happens is that when you reinstall it, it works perfect, but only for one or two searches, and then it goes right back.
Yeah. Which is why I don't know if it's the app, I don't know if it's the iPad, I don't know if it's the internet. I don't know. A number of people saying same, you know, they're trying this and it's not doing that. But you're on 11.2.1, the current iOS version on a 10.5-inch iPad Pro. If people would try that and let us know. So try network reset and see if that helps. That's in the settings. And then if it doesn't, yeah, I think a trip to the Apple store, who knows? They may say, oh, yeah. you've got that Rev3 internet connection board, and you need to get that fixed. Who knows?
All right. Well, if you couldn't give me an answer, I feel better because I spend I don't know how many hours on it.
Yeah. Well, truth
be setting somewhere that I inadvertently.
I don't think it is. It that doesn't make sense to be a setting that says, well, don't link, don't work in search, but work everywhere else. That doesn't make sense. It can't be that. It really does sound like it's something wrong with the YouTube app, but I can't figure out what that would be.
Hey, well, thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Yeah. Happy New Year. The reason, this is the truth, the reason you call tech support is not because they have superior knowledge. Often they have inferior knowledge. We call tech support for one thing. They're the ones talking to a lot of people. They know if this is a common problem. That's what you're really trying to find out. Is it just me? Or is everybody else having this problem? If it's just you, then it's something unique to your settings, unique to your hardware. If everybody's having the problem, well, all you can do is wait till whoever caused the problem, YouTube or Apple, fixes it. So that's the question. Is it just me? Is it just me? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the gizwiz coming up. Yeah. I got to show you. I can't wait to take my the new pictures I have from my trip, my most recent trip, and put them on glass. This is Fracture. Let me show you how this came. Fracture is a photo decor company that wants to take your images out of the digital ether, off the phone, off the tablet, off the hard drive, and put them on your walls in the most beautiful way. This is the Fracture. They come as small as this, 4.8 inches by 6.4. It's kind of like a regular photo print. And notice how they come. They come beautifully packaged. Not a lot of, not bubble wrap or anything. It's all with these cardboard inserts. The picture's in there, right? This comes with a screw for mounting. It's on a foam core with a nice hole for hanging. And these are just, when you print on glass, something happens to pictures. Let me show you some more, a little bit larger here. They just, the contrast, the colors pop. And they're borderless. If you want, you can also, they have an editor in it, and you can print borders. If you shoot them on a phone or use Instagram, they have Instagram square prints as well. You won't have to modify the borders. We shoot a lot on DSLRs, which are, is it 4:3, not 3:2? I can't remember. Anyway, they're different aspect ratio. But you can have borders, or you can get rid of the borders with the editor. It's all up to you. And they just look beautiful. And they come, what's nice, they come perfectly. I love the packaging. Let's get a little bit bigger. This was a picture I took. It's one of my favorite images of my son's high school graduation because it reminds me of Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack having a spaghetti dinner. Henry's just giving me the eye there. That's a black and white photo. I got to tell you, the contrast, the color, Fracture does such a good job of this. I just love these. We're getting bigger and bigger. They go all the way up to, you want to see the biggest size? 21.6 inches by 28 inches. That's like... what is that? It's almost 2 feet by 3 feet. Look at this. There you go. There's a big one. This is a picture I took in the Galapagos of a seal yelling at a flightless cormorant. I love this image, and I love having it on my wall like that. Look at that. Hang that over the fireplace. Something about printing on glass just looks gorgeous. Fracture. They're printed in the U.S., handmade in Gainesville, Florida. U.S. sourced materials. You can feel good about it. And each Fracture comes with a 60-day, 2-month happiness guarantee. So you're sure you'll love your order or your money back. I am a Fracture fanatic. When I find a good picture, I go to fracture.me. Click, you can get portrait, landscape, square format for Instagram. They have an advanced editor. You can change the colors. You can change the color of the border. I like to sometimes to print a border, a dark border, on some of my prints. I feel like it just makes it stand out a little bit more, especially the black and white ones. But you get to choose. Fracture.me. Oh, I got a deal for you. Of course I do. 15% off your first order if you use the offer code TECHGUY15. That's my son and daughter. I love that picture. This is a great gift. I gave this to everybody, all the family members. Fracture.me. Don't forget to use the offer code TECHGUY15 at checkout for 15% off. Aren't they gorgeous? I love these images. It's a great way to, a lot of times you take a great picture and it's just sitting somewhere. It's on a website or on a hard drive and you don't see it day to day. Having it as you walk down the hall, and I do have this image exactly. as I walk down the hall. It's just something about it. This one's in our living room. Fracture.me, offer code TechGuy15 for 15% off your first order. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. We do it just for Dick. He loves the disco. Dick DiBartolo's here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him our Gizwiz because he's a gizmo wizard. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, pal?
You didn't have heat in your building, I saw.
Just for a day. And even with the heat, this is really not good.
The bomb cyclone has hit New York City.
Yes. It's going to be the coldest ever tomorrow at tonight at 3 degrees.
Three
with a wind chill.
3 degrees.
Yeah, with a wind chill of minus 20.
Oy, yoy, yoy, correct. So you just don't go. I know you're trying to take, you have a camera on your boat on
yes.
the East River, and it got all snowed up.
It got snowed up, and now I can see. Fortunately, I put that, I think it's Rain-X, and it slowly, the ice slowly fell off the window, and I can see my boat, and it's almost frozen solid in ice.
Wow. Where can I, what's the, can we talk about it? Where, what's the address for
that? Oh, yeah. You know what? I will have to email you that.
No, that's all right. I'll find it.
That's okay.
It's on your Instagram or Facebook or something. I saw it somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what do you got for us today on this cold day?
off to Las Vegas on Monday.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, it's 40 and 50 degrees there, so I'm going to bring a bathing suit. So I have my selfie stick, but I wanted a little selfie light.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of these on Amazon. They're little, it's a little round circle, 32 LEDs. It's on a big clip.
Oh, the circle's the best way to do a light.
Yes.
Yes.
And so it has low, medium, and high. But what I found was I found one that has a 1,500 milliamp battery to power the light. But if there's an emergency, this one has USB out. So if you're using your phone and your phone is running low on power, you can also suck out some power from the selfie light.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great idea, and it's cheap. It's $15. For some reason, if you want it in red, it's only $14. And it's pretty nicely built. I have it here, and I'm packing it as I go to Vegas.
Wow, where? So, is it on Amazon or?
It's on Amazon. It's also under the tech guy at gizwiz.biz.
I always go to your website, gizwiz.biz. Oh, there it is, the selfie light. Wow,
yeah,
I didn't think you were that vain, Dick. I just am surprised.
Well, you know, surprisingly, you can face it towards someone else. I didn't realize that.
Oh, wow. Who'd have thunk it? Never tried that. Actually, the price is right. So you're taking this to CES?
Are
you?
I'm taking this to CES. Yeah, every once in a while, down in the basement, you get one of those exhibits where they're off in the corner.
Not well lit. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So you just and it's two and a half ounces. So it's real easy to throw in your pocket.
Nice. Are you looking forward to CES, or are you like the rest of us?
Oh, you know, Leo, I posted it earlier. I have 3,200 press releases.
Oh my goodness!
Like other press people, no one reads them anymore. It's just too many.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it a bit.
Well, next week you come back. We'll take a look at some of Dick's weird, because he always goes for the weird stuff in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick's unusual gadgets from CES. You probably get a year's worth of gadgets from just one trip alone, and enjoy the balmy weather in Vegas, my friend.
Yes, I will.
Dick DiBartolo, his website, gizwiz.biz, the place to go for, of course, more information about his selfie light. But you can also go there and play the What the Heck Is It contest over?
The What the Heck Is It game is started January, February. But now, since I'm sending everything out from here, there's 6 of the right answer and a dozen for the stupid, clever answer.
So fewer magazines.
But the game goes on.
It's more competitive than it used to be. It's a close-up picture of a gizmo or a gadget. Whatever could it be? The gizmo or gadget last time was some weird glove belt attachment.
Yeah, glove. You don't have a glove catcher?
No.
This is a clever idea. You put it on your belt, and when you take your gloves off, it clips to your belt. You know where your gloves are. You don't leave them in the restaurant.
You got three people knew that.
Yes.
Yes. And they all won autographed Mad magazines. Get your chance to win an autographed Mad magazine. Hand-mailed from Dick's own mailroom.
Exactly.
Yes. Gizwiz.biz. Giz, you'll be doing, I'm sure, some Gizwiz podcasts from CES with Chad, right?
Well, Chad's coming out, so we're going to do all our videos out there and then have them through the years.
Gizwiz.tv. That'll Perfect. Be fun. It's so cold in New York that Dick's... I'm watching Dick on Skype. You froze solid.
I froze solid. That's not a mustache. That's ice.
You froze happy, which is always good. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care. See you next week.
Let's just leave Dick's frozen. Still good. It's like one frame every minute. Bill's in Pasadena, California. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I have sort of a two-part question. I'm 50 years old, and I'm considering a career change, and I'm thinking about learning coding. And I'm wondering what would be a good language to start, like Python or Ruby or something like that. And is it even worth it if I'm looking for work? Like, how would I get work when there's so many 20-somethings that already do all this stuff?
And they're cheap, right? And they're easy. But you may or may not – I think you can get work. There's huge demand. You're going to want to be very careful and pick an area where there's a need, right? So there's plenty of web front-end developers out there, but you're going to pick something that may – but all of this will be moot until you learn a language, although the language you choose is even impacted by this. So I think a little research-based, get out there, do some informational interviews, find out where there's a need. For instance, if there's a need for people who can write code for Windows – in Visual Basic, then you would want to learn Visual Basic and Visual Studio on Windows. If you just asked me, I want to learn programming, I'm not necessarily focused on career. I might say Python is a great starting language to learn. And of course, the other thing that impacts this is where do you learn? And there are a lot of courses for learning Python, even free courses out there. Java might be the single most useful language. Most systems programs are written in C++, a lot of big applications too. So it really is going to be a question of figuring out where there's demand, because as an older worker entering the marketplace, yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm older too. It gets harder and harder. Coding is particularly seen as a young person's game. But I think you have a lot of value to offer, but you've got to find the right niche. So figure out where there's demand. Learn the languages that are most useful in that area. That's where you start. You start with demand. There are lots of places you can learn online. This is the good news, free or inexpensively. And if you're motivated, if you're good at it and you love it, I think you can always find work. I really do. And it's a heck of a lot of fun to program. Out of time. Good luck. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.